desert in the great American Southwest. How do you do all? Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be, wherever you are in the world. There are so many time zones out there. There is actually more than 24. There are places where it's actually the half hour when it's the hour everywhere else. Wild out there. But it's a wild world we live in, isn't it? All right, about to kick it off for us, Saturday, Sunday. It is so it really is great to be here. If you check out my webcam, which is on the coasttocoastam.com website, you will see a photograph I took late this afternoon, which I thought was kind of cool. I've got a camera mounted out back behind my house, and this looks out across the, well, sort of what is my backyard, a wall, and then out into the desert. And I thought it was kind of a cool time of the afternoon, so I snapped a photograph. That's on the webcam right now. There is, of course, Fast Blast that you may avail yourself of. That's also on the website. You go up there and click, and you can send me a message with a question, a statement, a rant, whatever. Okay, there was a picture on the Coast to Coast AM website this last week, and, you know, many times I'm going to find myself obviously talking about things that have occurred during the week. And last week, at some point, there was a picture that rocked me back, or a set of pictures, more likely. And these are obviously NASA pictures. They were obviously taken from space. And I'm telling you, I just about lost it when I saw them. Now, I know that the Antarctic and the Arctic have been melting. However, I had not had it graphically displayed for me in the manner that it is graphically displayed. So I called tonight Powers That Be with the website and had them put it back up, in fact, on the front page of the website. It's a picture from space of our world, specifically of the Arctic. And there's two pictures, one taken in 1990 and the other in 1999. I have no idea with reference to what for what reason it was done during the week. I'm sure there was a relevant guest, but my God, look at these photographs. In 1990, it's all white. It's all ice. It's all snow. It's what you would expect of the Arctic. And now, in 1999, I should say now, it's been several years since, if you'll look at the photograph, you will see mostly blue and very little white. Most of the Arctic, or the majority of the Arctic, I guess it would be fair to say, to the eye, to my eye, has melted, and now it's water. With this going on at the top of the world, and the incredible calving going on at the bottom of the world, it is clear we are in the middle of a really big change. So I had them put the pictures back up. I mean, go up there, and I have no idea why they originally had them up, what it was in reference to, but it really doesn't matter. Your eyes will tell you the story. 1990 and 1999. Wow. We are in the middle of some big kind of change. Reminding you, if you have a guest you'd like to see on the air, or you are a guest with a really cool story, you can email me. I'm artbell@mindspring.com. Two email addresses, actually, artbell@mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com. Looking around the world a little bit now, a Palestinian woman wrapped in explosives has blown herself up. It occurred Saturday inside a seaside restaurant popular with both Arabs and Jews, killing 19 bystanders, including 4 children. The bombing prompts new calls for Israel to act on threats to expel Yasser Arafat. In other words, toss him out of the country. Our president branded a bombing in Israel that killed 19 Saturday as despicable, saying the attack was a reminder of the Palestinians' need to combat terrorism. Arnold went on the attack Saturday, denouncing the latest sexual harassment allegations made against him as untrue, and charging that all of the 11th hour accusations were intended to wreck his campaign for governor. And it remains to be seen, of course, whether it will do that, but we'll know soon, won't we? In Las Vegas last night, word reaching us, you know, the premier Las Vegas act now for some time has been Siegfried and Roy. And as you must know by now, illusionist Roy Horn of that duo remains in the hospital. He's in critical condition Saturday. One day after a tiger attacked him during a show, it reached up, it was said, on Matt's site, Matt Drudge, and dragged him off like a rag doll. Authorities say they still really don't know what his chances for recovery are, but he's still alive now. But it grabbed him by the neck. My God, it was awful. It was my understanding it was the first time that particular tiger had been on stage. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? A tiger just grabbing you by the neck. And you can easily imagine the injuries that would result from that. And, of course, I've been following the story that broke this week of Rush Limbaugh and the allegations of the abuse of painkillers. Good Lord, talk about a rush to judgment. Sorry for that, but it was a rush to judgment. After all, without the facts, and we really don't have the facts yet, do we? Without them being known yet, crucifixion would already seem to have occurred in the media. That's right, crucifixion. You know, I'm really not a Republican or a Democrat. In fact, really, I'm a registered libertarian, and I have been now for over a decade. Beyond my core beliefs, you know, in the sanctity of individual privacy and behavior and a lot more that make me a libertarian, I've started to notice for some time now that what used to be polite discourse between the right and the left politically has turned blood mean. I mean blood mean. Unbridled joy at the sometimes flawed human behavior of anybody who doesn't share our point of view of the world politically or whatever. Well, there's a nasty streak that's crept into people who used to simply disagree or agree to disagree or whatever, and it's really nasty out there, kind of like sharks who see the red tint in the water, particularly when someone who has achieved, someone like Rush, for example, who, whether you agree or disagree with him, is obviously enormously talented. To sit in that seat every day for that many years, just enormously talented. God, we really love to try and bring people down, don't we? Why is that anyway? Why do we do that? You know, Rush and I work for the same company. And the words I say now have nothing to do with anything my company said to me, which is zero, by the way. We're both talk show hosts. And I just can't tell you how much respect I have for what Rush has achieved over the years. Man, what a haul it's been. I know myself what a media feeding frenzy is like. It's awful. Awful. But you mark my words, Rush will get through all of this just fine, like the pro he is. And to those of you who take so much joy at the man's situation, all I can say is shame on you. In mere moments, we are going to open the lines, and for half an hour, you can blast away about anything you want to talk about. So stand by for that. Now, one of the world's greatest mysteries, and I don't say that lightly, crop circles are one of the world's greatest mysteries. They haven't been solved, other than a couple guys with chains and boards. The important ones, the big ones, were not done, have not been done by human beings. There's no question about it. Was a big one just cropped up, so to speak, in Ohio. Ohio farmer Dale Mark has a crop circle in his soybean field. You ought to see it. Passengers flying overhead in a private airplane last week discovered the whole thing. And one part of the design seems to be a circle surrounding a triangle, whatever that might mean. Another resembling a peace sign, and a third looks like a bullseye. His wife, Mary Ellen, is puzzled because the circles are on land that's extremely difficult to get to from the road. She says, quote, it does make you wonder because there's no in or out. Researcher Jeffrey Wilson says the circle was created 4 to 5 weeks ago, even though it was only recently discovered. The ground is very isolated, and You can't see it from the roadway, he said. We think it would not be the place that a hoaxer would go because no one would see it. In addition, it would appear to be the real McCoy. In other words, it's been irradiated in some manner. Some kind of microwave energy or something very similar to microwave energy has created this. And we don't, of course, know what that is, but trust me when I tell you, there is nothing that I know of that man has short of perhaps something radiated from a satellite that might do this. Otherwise, this continues to be, this one in Ohio, the ones in Europe, the ones around the world that aren't done by guys with chains and boards, continue to be one of the biggest mysteries, in my opinion, in the world. Here's an interesting little story from the Goddard Space Flight Center. A satellite data since 1998 is indicating the bulge in the Earth's gravity field at the equator is growing. And scientists think that the ocean may hold the answer to the mystery of how the changes in the trends of Earth's gravity are occurring. Now, over the years, I've done a few programs in which people began to notice a change in magnetic north. And sure enough, you know, magnetic north does vary around a little bit. The magnetic field does shift a little bit, but it's been doing some pretty good jiggles lately. And by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, I think it's out now. No, I know it's out on DVD, The Core. There's a movie called The Core. Now, it is a science fiction movie about what would happen if the Earth's magnetic field stopped. Something we've talked about on this program more than just once. And in this fictional account, the Earth's magnetic field does stop. And I won't tell you any more about it than that, but it's really a pretty good movie. Pretty good, pretty darn good movie. Now, it didn't get a lot of attention when it was in the theaters, but I watched it all the way through, and I really enjoyed it. I thought The Core was an excellent movie. So while our real field does jiggle around a little bit, there have been various stories about what might happen if the Earth's magnetic field stopped. And there's a pretty good rendition in that movie of what would occur. It's pretty scary stuff. Now, the following is gossip, but it's pretty interesting gossip. It's from a Boeing, or said to be from a Boeing insider. Now, you never know. This could be pure BS, but I want to read it to you anyway. He says that Boeing is leaving our area. Most Puget Sound Sounders have already figured that out. They are slowly folding all their plants down, even have plans currently drawn to build large housing developments with the land they leave behind. Remember, all this is speculation. Boeing is a big deal for us, so it makes the area sad to lose so many jobs, but our cost of doing business is way high in the Seattle-Tacoma area, way too high for them to remain profitable there. But here is the real reason this departure is taking place. All their air transport is going to be drastically changed. They have developed highly reliable small personal transports. Get this. Freight, too, designed kind of like Star Trek to move individuals from point A to Z with materialization within certain short areas, he said, of about 10 miles in radius to begin with. They plan to start with cargo, and then when the public, all of you, sees how well it goes, they're going to move on to people. They already know it works with people, but know that it's going to take a lot of PR to make people feel safe. He mentioned the transport areas are round disks. Imagine this, with different colors according to weight or size. He said it reminded him of a Twister game when you look at the grid. Example, you'd put a certain weight cargo on a red disk, and it would transfer to another red disk. These disks will start as platforms in main areas, but as time progresses, they plan for them to be like bus stops, close and easy access, with a pre-purchase of tickets on a smart card that would be read with all sorts of other info as you stand on the disc. Second, new generation of planes, which will be anti-gravity type planes that work totally differently than jets. No need for large airports. Mm-mm. They're reworking the future transportation and plan to bring all of this about in approximately the year 2010. These plans are smaller, than the huge 777s, planes rather, that are now used, because it will be for people only, and like short-haul ferries, they will work so fast and easy, they'll just speed 50 people from any point to any point, so small city centers can be used as depots. So he says that's what's going on with Boeing. Indeed, just gossip. It is probably not true. However, one never knows. Wouldn't it be something if they were really on to something of that magnitude and they knew the entire aircraft industry was going to be completely different and we were all going to be transported like Star Trek, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. I rather think it's the first thing he said, but you never know. Mysterious tiles. That's right. Mysterious tiles have been turning up all over the U.S. They're about the size of license plates, and they come embedded in the street, and they all say the same thing. Here's what they say. Toynbee idea in Kubrick's 2001, resurrect dead on planet Jupiter. These are embedded in the streets. Toynbee idea in Kubrick's 2001, resurrect dead on planet Jupiter. Doug Wargall writes in the Kansas City Star that he first spotted one in his hometown in 1996, so they've been around for a while, and it's still there today, by the way. He did some internet research and found that there have been more than 100 now, 130 actually, of these Toynbee tiles seen in at least 20 cities around the U.S., two in South America. In New York, around 50 tiles have been found. In Philadelphia, about 30. 20 have been spotted in Baltimore, 16 in D.C. Jeff Martin, supervisor of street maintenance and repair for Kansas City, says, when you look at it closely, you can see it's some kind of epoxy or maybe super hard plastic that's actually inlaid in the asphalt itself. To do this, he says, would require a lot of prep. You'd have to heat the road surface. You'd have to have special equipment. An operation like this would take some time, and if you wanted to avoid being seen while you were installing something like this, it would require some serious planning. Whoever did this has fairly sophisticated know-how. Now, what do you suppose that would mean? Toynbee idea in Kubrick's 2001, resurrect dead on planet Jupiter. UFOs are being seen in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Now, these are not kids. They're people in their 50s, professional people. Not into, they say, hallucinatory drugs or anything of that sort. People look at you funny, says Pam Wingfield, when you tell them that you've seen a UFO, but what we saw was unidentified. It was flying, and it was an object. David Wren writes in the Myrtle Beach Sun News that Pam and two other vacationers from Virginia all saw the yellow and orange glowing spheres. There have been at least six other sightings of yellow, orange, or red lights floating near the horizon in the past few weeks. In other words, a big flap going on in South Carolina. Now, this came, the following came from Matt Drudge, Berlin, Connecticut. It in a scene that sounds more biblical than plausible. Masses of amphibian eggs literally rained down on Primo Diagata's porch last month as the remnants of Hurricane Isabel moved through the state. At first, Diagata thought the thumping noise that he and his wife heard on the back deck September 19th was hail, but oh no. When he went outside to take a look, Diagata discovered that here they were, tiny gelatinous eggs with dark spots in the middle. I couldn't even pick them up with a spatula, he said. They were so sticky. Biologists from nearby Central Connecticut State University say the eggs are probably frogs. And because no frogs in Connecticut lay eggs this late in the year, scientists and naturalists speculate that they may have come from North Carolina or another warm location on the winds of Isabel. Now, that's pretty interesting. In fact, I think I just printed this out. Here's somebody who says, As usual, the so-called experts couldn't identify the species of the eggs, but they are confident the eggs were lifted up out of a warm pond or marsh or something and blown from North Carolina to Connecticut by a hurricane. Isabel. Ridiculous. This is another prime example of modern science at work, diligently attempting to explain natural phenomena without investigating. They don't attempt to explain, however, why only amphibian eggs fell from the sky. I mean, where were the amphibians? Where were the fish, the snakes, the turtles, the crayfish, the whirligigs, and other denizens of a pond, if a pond, in fact, was lifted up in North Carolina and blasted to Connecticut, as the experts claim? Wouldn't these other creatures also be raining down, following an easily plotted path from the Carolinas to Connecticut? Well, I agree with you, my friend. That also applies to things that go blazing across the sky from space. We always say, well, they're meteors. How do we know they're meteors? They're unidentified. They're unidentified flying objects, actually.
Or the scent of a sand, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and the use them to help us to
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Certainly is. Good morning, everybody. You know, that fellow, Diagata, who had all of these, whatever it is, fall on him? Well, he's trying to hatch some of them, and he's said, I'm going to just sit and see what happens, but a few of them have sprouted what looks like a little tail. So whatever it is, fell out of the sky. And he's hatching them. Good luck, Mr. Diagata. And there's one more item here about stuff falling from the sky. Stuff indeed. The headline is, UFO sewage, not from plane, says official. You ready for this? Wellington, that's New Zealand. The mystery of what unidentified flying object dumped a load of what looks like and smells like sewage all over a farmhouse near New Zealand's capital, Wellington, remains on Wednesday after the Civil Aviation Authority said it definitely did not come from an airplane. This is a load, but not from a plane. An analysis of the muck, kind of them to use that word, that splattered the house in Tecupa Valley on September 14th confirmed that it had no trace of the chemicals always put in an aircraft toilet, said Bill Summer, an authority. Farmer Shoney Gordon, poor Farmer Shoney Gordon, who raises sheep and cattle and knows something about the subject, is not convinced, and he's taking a sample to a laboratory specializing in human feces for a second opinion. Since she spoke about the day that the UFO hit the house, there has been a spate of other reports of mystery droppings from about the country, with ducks and geese mainly blamed. However, the owner of this farmhouse said, "I didn't hear a plane, but if this was a bird, it was one hell of a sick bird, because it was from one end of the house to the other. Now, what do you suppose could do something of that magnitude?" One more time, because I think it is so important. We are all residents and passengers on planet Earth, and I'm telling you, just take a trip, take a moment. It's late at night, you know, you have time for a little bit of inner reflection about stuff. So if it's a Saturday night, take a moment out and go to your computer if you get a chance, and go to coasttocoastam.com. That's a website. I had them put these photographs back up to look at the entire top part of our world as it was in 1990. The top picture be right on the front page there. And then to look at the bottom photograph in 1999. And for this not to cause you serious reflection and thought about the direction and what we're doing, whether it is by our hand or the hand of God, or it's just some great cyclical occurrence, it really doesn't matter. It is such a profound change. The ice is going away. All of the ice is going away. There's going to be nothing left up there except an ocean that our navies will have to learn to navigate and protect and whatever. It's going to change. The whole world is changing. This planet we live on right now is changing before our very eyes. Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey there, this is Patrick in Eugene, Oregon.
Hello, Patrick.
Hey there. You know, the scary thing about that whole teleportation thing is, what if they got two people sent to the same little circle?
I remember some of the difficult moments in Star Trek when they had transporter trouble. Let me hit hold here and hit it again. And the molecules got screwed up, and people ended up in some horrible mixture. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's just scary. That sort of thing gives me the creeps.
I wonder if that could even possibly be true. You know, it's just a rumor. It's about Boeing, but it would actually be pretty cool if it was true.
Yeah, I think they would probably regulate it pretty heftily. But I got a question about a show I heard like in 2001, and it was like a year before you were off the air, I think, and you were talking to some woman who said she could fly by using a trampoline to, like, I don't know, get off the air, and then somehow she would...
You mean she would launch herself with a trampoline?
Right, but then she would stay at the top of her jump. She wouldn't fall down, and then the person who was there said, "Never do that again, you're not allowed back in the gym," or something like that.
You know, I kind of don't remember that. However, I like the concept.
Well,
trampoline, up you go and you stay.
Every boy's fantasy, I guess.
I wish I could expand on it for you by remembering it, but I don't. As I said, though, I like the concept. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, take care. Yeah. Using kind of like Superman. Superman, as you'll recall, always had to launch himself, right? He'd take several steps and off he'd go. I used to do that when I was a kid. I fell down a lot. But I tried to launch myself in the same fashion when I was a little kid. I thought it was so cool. I mean, just jump, you're off. And fortunately, it was the rug I fell on most of the time. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
I'm doing okay, sir.
I want to ask you about two guys you had on. They both had to do with Bigfoot. I may not remember both of them, but one guy was the guy that claimed to have killed two Bigfoot.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that's the first guy, and then you had another guy. About him, the first guy, whatever became of him, the last appearance of his, I remember, you had Robert Walker on talking with him.
Okay.
And he was going to go and possibly check out where the guy...
All right, the way it ended up was, and I cannot say that I blame him at all. First of all, I guess I should tell you that I believe that man. I believed him when he did the program. And I still believe him now. Now, having said that, there was one little giddy-up in the whole thing.
he was prepared to lead authorities to the bodies of the big feet, I guess, plural. Well, I don't know. He discussed it with his wife, who I think properly told him, forget it, because they're going to charge you with something. And she was not ready for the publicity. She was not ready for the brouhaha that would go on. And I cannot say I blame her. And so he backed away based on her demand. And if anything, you better listen to your wife, because your wife is the one you got to live with afterwards, not all the people who want it. Okay. That's what happened to him. And you know, I told him, I said, look, if anything ever changes and you're ready, I'm here. And I am.
You haven't heard from him since?
No.
Okay. You had another guy on. I don't remember his name, and I'm sorry, and it's been a while, but he claimed to have taken the Patterson film, did something to it, and
yes.
It. Okay, you know where I'm going?
Oh, well, of course, yeah. In other words, the entire thing was claimed to be faked, right?
No, not at all. It was just the opposite. He claimed that the way he enhanced the film, I can't remember how he did it, that he saw a whole family of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever,
okay,
behind trees, so forth and so on, and it was his theory that that female Bigfoot in the film were going to lead Gimlin and Patterson into like a trap. Mm. Does that sound familiar to you at all? I remember that, but I just don't remember the guy's name.
No, it does not. Okay. I had Robert W. Morgan on, is the person I had on. Now, listen to this. This is supposedly the sound of a real Bigfoot. You can actually hear the voices of the hunters that were taping this. And if you heard that out in the middle of the forest, you'd become a believer. There's nothing in the forest, nothing that makes that sound.
Uh-uh.
Right?
That's horrifying.
Yeah, it's horrifying, is right. And there have been additional recent sightings of Bigfoot in South America. So despite the fact that somebody said it was all a fake, people keep seeing this creature. So something's out there, sir.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I thank you very much for the call, and take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning.
Hello, Mr. Bell. I first must apologize for calling on a cell phone.
That's all right. Actually, it's one of the better-sounding ones so far.
Oh, that's good. Well, my question for you is, I may be able to manipulate matter involuntarily.
Oh, my.
Now,
involuntarily.
Involuntarily, and I don't know if I'm going back in time, and I have no memory.
Wait, back up. Let's get to this manipulation of matter. What do you think you have done, voluntarily or involuntarily?
I think, I've been looking for things lately. I have a habit of losing things, and I look, and if I think very hard about something being in a certain place,
yes.
Even if I've looked there,
yeah.
It is.
I know, but how do you know this isn't the, I know I looked there, and yet the second time I went back, it was there. You're thinking you manifested it back in that place, right?
Yeah, well, see, I step on the places on the floor, or I manage to look there, and, you know, the people who put it there, it's not me. They swear they did it. And it's like, I don't know if you've seen the movie Dark City.
Mm-mm.
But, well, okay, I'm not spoiling the movie for you because they tell you 3 seconds in. It's called tuning. You kind of manipulate matter the way you would like it to be. And I have even had items that have changed, and nobody notices it but me. And I haven't seen the Philadelphia experiment, but I'm familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe time travel is possible. But I don't know if my mind is going beyond linear time and I'm putting them where they are, or I'm controlling people's minds from the future or from the past. But they're rather large items, like, you know, chairs, you know, pieces of, furniture that may be stowed away, that sort of thing.
Well, it sounds like you're chewing over your own problem pretty well. I'm not sure exactly what to tell you. That's quite a talent, though.
Yeah, I don't know if I might involuntarily use it in a negative fashion is my big fear.
Mm-hmm. Well, remind me not to get on an airplane with you, and I don't know what to tell you except good luck, and you might want to go to a researcher if you really believe you can demonstrate this and give it a shot.
Okay, that's the only advice you have for me?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, that kind of thing is incredible, and you never know. It could be. There are people, I believe, who have certain powers, and I would think that many of them... In fact, that'd make a whole great show, wouldn't it? People who think they have certain powers. How about the rest of you? Anybody out there think you've got perhaps at least one of Superman's abilities or some variant thereof? The ability to affect matter voluntarily or involuntarily? You could do a whole show on people who think they have powers. Now, these people would, of course, generally not talk about it. I mean, you'd be either locked up or, somebody do a quick autopsy on you to try to figure it out. So, I mean, people wouldn't talk about this kind of thing, right? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
This is Vince calling from the Mile High City of Denver.
Yes, sir.
Last week, I think it was last week, I heard you mention to a caller that it was KFI that was responsible for getting you back on the air.
Specifically, a young lady... A persistent young lady named Robin Bertolucci at KFI in Los Angeles, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask what they did to get you back on the air, but maybe I shouldn't.
Well, no, I that's fine. I'm more than happy. I will explain it to you right now. At the expense of redundancy, many of you may have missed it, and here's the way the whole thing developed. It's very simple, really. I was happily... in retirement, if you can call owning a radio station and running it along with your wife retirement, but me whizzing along day to day, and this incredible person named Robin Bertolucci called, and she's the program manager, director, honcho over at KFI in Los Angeles, and she said, hey, why don't you do a show for KFI? How about that idea? Would you be willing to do that? And I thought about it. I said, no, I'm retired, Robin. Well, I know, but how about doing a show? And, well, I said, no. And so then she called back. She said, well, how about if I call you next Tuesday, and maybe you'll feel different. I said, all right, call me next Tuesday. I said, call next Tuesday. And I said, no, I don't think so. And then she called me again. And then I said, well, hey, look. And I was sort of going to try to cast her away with this. I said, doing a show for one station, magnificently large as is KFI, would be the same amount of work as doing it for all the network, the whole thing. Trying to reason this away, right? And she said, well, okay then, how about coming back on the weekends and doing the network show? And I, at this point, I'm going, oh, okay, fine, call the network, run the idea past the network, and I thought that was going to be that. 5 minutes later, the phone rang. And it was the president of our network saying, hey, you want to do weekends? So that's how it happened. One incredibly persistent woman named Robin Bertolucci, just a triple A type personality who wouldn't give up. And so that's how I'm here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Where are you, my dear?
I'm in Sacramento, but...
But what?
I don't know if I've heard you talking to somebody else just now.
Well, that's because we have a delay system here, and your responsibility as a caller, because I come to you without screening your call, is to turn your radio down right away and trust in the fact when I say you're on the air that you are.
Okay, I didn't know it was that delayed. Well, I heard a caller say that he knew somebody that used to jump on a trampoline and then stay up in the air.
Well, he was relating the fact that I had it might have even been a caller, not a guest, somebody who said they could do that.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Well,
can you do it?
Not now, but when I was a child, I did it one time. I was jumping up and down on a couch, and I went up to the ceiling. I stayed there for about a second, and then...
I mean, you really,
you know
beyond any shadow of a doubt, no question in your mind, you didn't fall back. You actually stayed in the air.
I actually stayed in the air.
like Wile E. Coyote just before he falls,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I've heard this story from other people. It is so fascinating. I've always been, you know, intrigued with the idea of levitating or flight or anything like that. So you really felt that? You're sure?
Well, you know, it's been so long, I can't say without a shadow of a doubt, but I'm almost absolutely 100% sure that that's what happened, because that's what I remember happening.
And how old are you now?
Oh, I'm 50 years old now.
50 years old. Have you ever occasionally since then taken a leap just on the off chance that, you know?
I don't remember. I mean, I know I tried it again right after that, but I am not sure if I did that again expecting it to happen. I
just... Well, you just never know what might be possible in this world. But I appreciate that, because you're one of many people to say that. I got a scoot.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You. Neat stuff. If you can imagine actually hesitating for a moment in midair, one way or the other. First time caller line, without a lot of time, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, Tom. One of your truck driving buddies going through Fort Worth.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wondered, what's the frequency of your radio station?
You mean the one here in Pahrump, Nevada?
Yeah.
Well, should you happen to be coming through Pahrump, Nevada, it is 95.1. And you'll hear it like for about 50 miles around. It's KNYE at 95.1, and you're a good guy for asking.
All right, yeah, because I was wondering, I go through Vegas a lot. I should be able to pick it up from the Vegas area, can't I?
Highway 15. I got to run, sir. Thanks.
All right, have a good one.
Right, take care. Be right back. Well, what do you think? Could we? Have you ever done that? Have you ever flown? Have you ever suspended yourself in midair in any way at all? There might be a couple times when I was much, much younger when I might remember, I don't know, a little something like that, a little extra suspension than one would expect. Coming up in a moment, boy, do we have a show for you. Ronald Klatz, Dr. Ronald Klatz is here. He's the physician, founder, and president of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. It's a real McCoy, science-wise. Anybody out there want to live to be 100, maybe 1,000? Stay right there.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know what? You're about to hear a guy who knows more about, about bumper music. I couldn't resist. More about staying alive than anybody else on the face of the planet. Dr. Ronald Klatz is recognized as a leading authority in the new clinical science of anti-aging medicine. What's going to be possible is going to blow your mind, folks. For over a decade, Dr. Klatz has been integral in the pioneering exploration of new therapies for the treatment and prevention of age-related degenerative diseases. He is the physician founder and president of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, Inc. Dr. Klatz is highly regarded by scientific and academic colleagues for his continuing medical education lectures on the demographics of aging and the impact of biomedical technologies on longevity. A consultant to the biotechnology industry and a respected advisor to several members of the U.S. Congress and others on Capitol Hill, Dr. Klatz devotes much of his time to research and to the development of advanced biosciences for the benefit of humanity. I believe the Bible suggested that man at one time lived in excess of 900 years. In a moment, we'll talk about, well, might that be possible again one day? What's being done right now and what may be done in the foreseeable future is about to shock you. I guarantee you this. Dr. Klatz is a fascinating man. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Oh, thanks, Art. It's great to be on air with you.
Yeah, it's been a while, huh?
a few years
or something like that? A few years, I think.
A few years, yeah.
Doctor, let's start in an interesting place. Why do we die?
You know, that's a very interesting question, and for the longest time, medicine hasn't been able to answer that. We really didn't understand why we aged. I mean, you know, it's clear why you die if you get shot with a bullet or if you fall off a building or get crunched by a freight train or something.
You bet.
You know, everyone understands why that happens, but why we die of old age has been a great mystery in medicine for the longest time. For the first time, we're beginning to understand what the mechanisms of aging truly are. And unfortunately, there is more than one mechanism involved.
It appears to be a complex whole bunch of different things that are all designed.
It's multifactorial, unfortunately, and that makes it hard to fix. But there are some things that do that, you know, that you can get your hands on around right now. For example,
but I mean, for the layman, doctor, do cells, I guess, begin to go that are not replaced? From, well, I was told actually right after you're born or something, you start losing cells.
You start losing cells in utero.
In utero.
Mm-hmm. Your brain, for example, the brain cells. You have probably almost twice as many brain cells in utero before birth as you do after birth.
Or put another way, you're smarter before you're born than...
Well, smartness is an interesting concept, but you certainly have more potential cells before you're born than after you're born.
I wonder why that is.
But generally speaking, we're anabolic. We're making more of ourselves until about age 25, and then from 25 onward, it's a downward slope.
Oh, bro.
And we're losing more cells. We're catabolic after the age of 25, so everything starts to head in the wrong direction. Our metabolism heads in the wrong direction. Mm. We start losing things like our hair, our vision, our nerve conduction velocity, the speed at which we're able to process information and memorize things. Our strength heads south, our bone mass heads south, our cardiac function, et cetera, et cetera. And this degenerative process of metabolism is what we in anti-aging medicine really call aging.
Yeah.
And we don't like it. That's why we are interested in anti-aging. You see, we want to slow down that process. We want to straighten out that slope so it goes straight across rather than heading downward. And in some instances, you know, we're able actually to reverse some of the degenerative metabolic processes of aging that lead to degenerative diseases and ultimately to death. You see, the important lesson that everyone really needs to know is that aging is a 100% fatal disease. You see, no one's ever beat it. Even Methuselah only made it to 969 years.
Incidentally, do you have any position on the Bible's references to the 900 plus years that humans achieved on a regular basis way back when?
Well, that was prior to the flood. The patriarchs were living into their 700s, 800s pretty routinely.
Is there any actual scientific evidence to back that up?
Not a lot, at least not in the
How about anecdotal? I mean, do we have anything at all?
know about the oldest living people that we can put our fingers on right now that are well documented, are in their 100, 115, 120, maybe a couple that are over 100 and, you know, 21, 22. There are reports, not well documented, of people in their 130s, and there was one interesting report of a fellow who lived to be almost 150, but the reports that are well documented and well accepted don't really go past 120. But, you know, that's interesting, too, because after the flood, the patriarchs were only living to 120.
Yes.
So maybe there is something to that after all, and maybe before the flood there was an environment in the earth that was so pristine and so healthy and so rejuvenative.
Well, here's a problem that I have. I mean, I hear you saying that, but if anything, there is more pollution in the world now. The ecology of the world has degraded. The polar caps are melting. All kinds of, you know, big ozone holes. All kinds of bad stuff is happening. But the average age that people are living to actually through this has really, in recent measurable years, actually gone up, hasn't it?
Well, actually, it's more than recent. It's been over the last 160 years that scientists have had good, really good, strong demographics of aging, and these come from studies in Sweden, where they have very, very good birth and death records and civic records of individuals.
Uh-huh.
We've seen a constant increase in life expectancy by about 2.5 years every decade. And so, and this is not decreasing, this is actually increasing. We're seeing that life expectancy, average life expectancy is increasing, and also maximum life expectancy is increasing as well. Vopal and Open, you know, published this in Science about 2 years ago, and quite startling to the gerontologic establishment that's been poo-pooing anti-aging medicine since we got started.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that, you know, in the year 1900 in the United States, life expectancy was only 47 years of age. Well, today it's 77 years of age in the U.S. and increasing every year. At the time of the Roman Empire, life expectancy was only about 30 years of age. At the time, you know, if you believe in the fossil record, I know everybody doesn't, but if you go back to cavemen, life expectancy was only about, or forget cavemen, you know, go back to the time of Christ. Mm-hmm. Life expectancy was only, you know, 25 years of age.
All right. Well, then, why? In other words, is it science? Is it the fact that we have defeated some disease? We have mitigated some other disease? We have science and inoculations and modern medicine. And is that what's done it, or is there something else at work?
Well, there are a lot of things at work. We have refrigeration. And because of that, we have plentiful food available. There's not this feast-famine cycle.
Right.
We have a much better sanitation, so we don't have the these vast plagues of intestinal diseases that killed so many young children.
But there must be more.
Well, we have better nutrition. We have better sanitation. We have vaccinations. We have, and in recent years, since the 1950s. We've been making major impacts on the incidence, at least, and the treatment of heart disease and stroke.
Mm.
That's going way down. We're actually beginning to impact slightly on cancer. It's not that we have better treatments, but now we have earlier diagnosis.
Uh-huh.
And with early diagnosis, you can, in fact, get a cure rather than just, you know, a 5-year survival. So with regard to prostate and breast cancer, we're actually making some good headway on those particular cancers, basically because of early diagnosis.
But still, even if all was well, I mean, they say the Pentium chip is eventually going to hit a brick wall. And with
don't believe it, Art.
Well, I don't necessarily. I'm just saying they say that. So if everything was well, and even if we cured cancer and did a lot toward heart disease, still this little thing, that this switch that gets thrown that makes us age,
it's still going to happen.
I mean, we're still going to bite the dust at about 120 or whatever, even if we get everything else.
Yeah, well, if we beat cancer, heart disease, and diabetes right now,
yes,
that's going to get us to about 98 years of age. And then if you drive a big car, say over 3,500 pounds, you know, one of those big clunker, you know, SUVs, you know, and you wear your seat belts and you get all the safety equipment, the side airbags and all that stuff,
yeah,
you're probably going to make it past 100. And, you know, that's not so bad. That's what, frankly, the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, is promising the baby boomers. We say that 50% of the baby boomers who are alive and well today are going to see their 100th birthday and beyond. And that message, by the way, is mirrored by the World Health Organization, who says pretty much the same thing. So making it to 100 today is pretty much a reasonable expectation if you're following an anti-aging, lifestyle. But what you're looking for is you're looking for a little bit more, aren't you, Art?
Well,
you're looking for that magic bullet. You want to get to 150, don't you? You're like me.
Well, you know, maybe. I mean, if such a bullet existed, yeah, maybe I'd opt to go to 150 or 200 or 300 or whatever.
Well,
might be done. But there is another side to that, which I won't get to right now. But there is another side to it. If we begin to achieve all of that, there's a million questions.
Oh yes, there are. But let me just say this: that we have the technology right now, through anti-aging medicine, to give most people who are really committed to a long and prodigious lifespan a healthy, youthful life expectancy of probably 85 years of age today, maybe 90, in a not-too-distant future, 100, and I believe in the next 20 years or so, maybe 110, 120 might be very possible, given the technologies that are available today or in the pipeline that seem to be available very shortly.
But basically, these are things that can be done today. What does that mean? Does that mean that you go out and you get shots of something? And
yeah.
You do. You get shots. Well, you get shots of what?
Well, it depends on what you're missing. Right now, the best we can do is we can look at an individual at any age. How old are you now, Art?
57.
Oh, you're still a kid. You got plenty of time left. Okay. We're going to, let's say you were to come to one of the doctors from the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine.
Yeah.
And you wanted to go through an anti-aging program.
Yeah.
He would take some blood and he'd put you on a treadmill and he'd put you under an MRI scanner, magnetic resonance imaging scanner. He'd scan you head to toe and he would be looking for cancer, heart disease, diabetes, Parkinson's disease, all kinds of metabolic problems that are going to cut your life short.
Yeah.
And he's going to take your blood and he's going to look for levels of oxidative products within your blood or antioxidant, free radical moieties that occur when your body burns oxygen for energy. He's going to look at the DNA within your cells and see if they're unraveling prematurely because some people's DNA is not quite as hardy as other people's.
You mean people's DNA unravels?
DNA starts to fall apart as you get older, which is not a good thing because
that
sets you up for what you and I think of as aging.
Well, okay.
Okay.
And this whole process, is this whole process kicked off by these telomeres that I hear about?
Well, telomeres are one part of the equation.
Just one
telomeres
part,
are kind of like if you wear shoes that have shoelaces.
Yes.
Telomeres are like those little plastic things on the ends of shoelaces to keep them from unraveling.
Yes.
Well, that's, if you think of the DNA helix, at the ends of the DNA helix, there's these things called telomeres. And what they are is they're the end pieces, the end caps of the DNA. And every time the DNA reproduces itself, because our cells are constantly dividing within our body, the DNA, the telomeres become shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And eventually, they hit a point where they just they don't want to reproduce as rapidly. Also,
and then your DNA unravels.
Yeah. Also, as your DNA unravels, as your DNA starts to reproduce and the telomeres shorten, and they start to open up little sites on the genes, which are, you know, these kind of like shoelaces that are intertwined. And these genes code for the production of proteins that do nasty things, that do things that we commonly regard as aging, like putting hair in your nose.
Wow.
Okay. or
in other words, you start coming apart like grandma's sweater, one thread being, oh God, what a horrible vision. And so, but, so telomeres in there, they're an important part of this, but they're not the only part
of it. Not the only part, but there are drugs, by the way, that we're working on that can actually lengthen telomeres.
Really?
Yeah. And, right now that research is being done specifically for cancer because the interesting thing with cancer is that cancer is immortal.
Yeah, I think
that's why it kills you.
I once said that to you, that cancer is the only thing that reproduces endlessly itself, while your other cells are going away. This thing is just wildly reproducing.
Right. And so what you want to do to stop cancer from reproducing is to put into the cancer by a vector, like a virus or something, into the cancer cell, something that slows down the reproductive rate, and telomerase, and which is an enzyme that reprogramming the telomeres within the cells of cancer, we can stop the cancer from growing and turns the cancer from being cancerous into being non-cancerous. So there's a lot of work being done with telomeres for cancer. That research also has some spin-off to aging or anti-aging medicine.
Well, that would only make sense. Since cancer is the out-of-control growth of cells, once you understand that and or control the growth of cells, then you control the growth of other cells.
Exactly. Huh. Once you have a control of that, you may be able to use your understanding of telomeres to help to reprogram the cells so that they continue to reproduce in a more youthful way.
Okay,
and
well, you know,
if you can accomplish that, then you're going to be in really good shape because then you can extend human lifespan quite significantly.
Okay, doctor, you know where the leading edge research on this sort of thing is, right?
Well, I hope so.
In other words,
I try to.
For example, on either reconstituting or changing these telomeres, so that they don't come apart and they don't, like a fuse that you have lit, just go down and then you unravel. How close are we actually to being able to affect that in years of research, do you suppose?
Well, it's not just telomeres. Telomeres, again, is one part of the DNA equation.
Right. I've got that. Right.
But I think that we're going to, we can already do it in cell culture. Okay? We can already do it in the lab.
Really?
Now, being able to do that in people is a different animal. We're talking about getting from the laboratory into humans maybe another 5 to 10 years.
But somebody's going to be a human experiment a lot sooner than that, right?
I would hope so. I would really hope so. Certainly with regard to cancer, I would expect maybe within 2 to 3 years.
Have you ever used, or do you use, drugs that are at the experimental stage in anti-aging? Do you use them yourself?
I do myself. I don't in patients. You see, anti-aging doctors are really, really conservative guys.
Uh-huh.
First rule of anti-aging medicine is do no harm.
Yes.
Second rule of anti-aging medicine is really do no harm. Okay?
Yes.
I mean, in anti-aging medicine, you are, you know, you're dealing with healthy people and you're trying to make them more healthy.
Right, but when you've got this magic elixir, and excuse me for being dramatic, but I mean, if there's a new magic elixir that nobody, or potential magic elixir that nobody really knows about yet, and you have an opportunity to, let us say, inject it to yourself, into yourself.
Well, it's not quite that dramatic. I mean, this isn't like,
But it could be someday, couldn't it?
It could be someday. It's not like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
What?
When you say using experimental substances, you know, in anti-aging medicine, something experimental has been around, in our opinion, for about 20 or 30 years. Nobody's using things that are just coming out of the laboratory that have never been tried on animals or people before.
Sure, but I mean, alright, well, hold on. We'll get back to this in a second. Dr. Ronald Klatz is my guest. Oh, what's coming? You're not going to believe it. He'll talk about what may be possible during our lifetimes. You know, so if you can make it to a certain age, then maybe, baby, you've got it made.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. So fine, look and drive. Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
In the nighttime, we're talking about what we all do, getting old. It was pretty well described by Dr. Klatz, but there are things on the horizon that really will shock you, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Anti-aging medicine is the real thing, and what they're close to is really fascinating, and the implications of it, of course, are amazing. So stay right there, and we'll do more of it. Well, let me try once more, because I'm always going to be pushing you to places you don't want to go, doctor. But, I mean, if there really was this magic elixir ready for the first human test, and there's nobody else around, would you, assuming that you had some confidence in it, risk it, and, you know, if say it add another 50 or 100 years, would you?
If it wasn't a question of safety.
Uh-huh.
There's
always a little bit of a question.
Okay, but if it was a very minor question of safety,
okay.
That's the good thing about anti-aging medicine is that our docs and we're really very concerned about safety. And if the safety is there, then we don't care about the efficacy. We'll try anything, because if it doesn't work, we haven't lost anything.
Really?
If it does work, great. Let me give you an example, because I know what you're looking for, and you want me to name names and give dates, and I'm going to give you one, and I rarely do this, Art. You know very conservative about this, but I'm going to tell you about a drug that has very good potential that's kind of exciting that we're looking at real seriously right now. There's a doctor, Moskowitz, who is used to be with the Veterans Administration, a researcher, a very fine researcher,
yes.
And he started this small company called Genomedics, and he has a website, Genomedics, GenoMedics.com.
Right.
And what he came up with, which was kind of interesting, is he discovered that angiotensin-converting enzyme was associated with all kinds of aging-related diseases, including many forms of cancer, heart disease, also involved with vulnerability to viral infections such as West Nile virus, poliomyelitis, St. Louis equine encephalitis, and even HIV. And what he has done is he has pooled hundreds and hundreds of research papers on this angiogenic converting enzyme and found that there is an association between people who have high levels of this enzyme, which occurs naturally with aging, and these diseases. And then what he has done with his company is he set up these clinical trials to give people the a drug which blocks ACE. Now, that may sound a little like out there. Oh, my God.
That's pretty far out there. Let
me finish a second, Art.
Yeah.
The drug that he's using to block ACE has been in clinical practice for the last 25 years. It's been commonly used as an antihypertensive medication.
Uh-huh.
And so it's out there. It's been tried. We know it's safe. And now he's applying this drug that is commonly used
to a new purpose.
For a new purpose. And that's what most of the anti-aging drugs are all about, including human growth hormone, including DHEA. I'm giving you some examples of commonly used anti-aging drugs, melatonin, pregnenolone, progesterone, All these different drugs that are being used in anti-aging medicine have basically been out there for quite some time. This is kind of interesting because this is a new one, but again, it's been out there for a long time. But if he's right, what he has found is a death hormone or a death drug that our bodies produce that lead to this inevitable spiral of aging.
And so then what he has produced is an anti-death drug.
Perhaps.
Oh, no kidding.
Would I try it? You bet.
I would presume that you might be in a position to do so if you really wish to. I don't know what your relationship with them is, but that's pretty interesting. How many people, do you know how big the test is?
These are pretty small trials. He's got, just a couple dozen in several different trials.
Uh-huh.
But his data is very interesting. But I mention this to point out that this is how anti-aging drugs are coming into the fore. It's not some guy in the basement working on a black box molecule out of nothing that's never been tested in animals or humans. We're really a conservative lot, but when we find something that works, believe me, we're going to try it, especially if the safety is there.
Well, What are the possibilities? Could a magic bullet be discovered at some point? Could there be that moment of epiphany for some scientist out there? And
I think so. Right now, the really exciting areas are on DNA repair.
DNA repair.
Mm-hmm. It turns out that, again, you know, there's multiple different reasons for aging, but you know, a common thread happens to be this unwinding or this injury to our DNA.
Right.
Now that's how free radicals happen. You know, that's why you take vitamins. Vitamins protect you against free radical damage. What do free radicals do? Well, free radicals damage the cell. What's the most sensitive part of the cell that they damage? They damage the DNA. If the DNA gets damaged, the cell either dies, mm-hmm. or it becomes aberrant in its production of proteins, or it may even be worse, become cancer.
Right.
So we like to take a lot of vitamins, vitamin A, C, E, selenium, things like that, to protect ourselves from these free radicals, these free radicals that occur.
And that does work.
And it does work, yes. People who take vitamins, we don't know if they live longer, but they certainly have less diseases. They have less instance of heart disease, less instance of stroke, less instance of cancer, certain forms of cancer. So we know that free radicals are very helpful. As a matter of fact, just last week, something that I never thought would happen in my lifetime is the pharmaceutical company sponsored a study for Medicare that actually came out endorsing the use of vitamins in the elderly for reducing the cost of Medicare because it lowers the incidence of hospitalization in elderly people.
Well, Tamara in Los Angeles rightly asks, where are we going to put all these extra very old people? Where will they live? How will we feed them? If we begin to extend the lifespan of people to 120, oh my God, so much is going to change. We're going to have so many old people. So it's not just can you make it to that age, but can you make it to that age with a decent, healthy lifestyle?
Well, that's what anti-aging medicine is all about, Art. I'm glad you brought that up. And the point of anti-aging medicine is the reason why we don't call it gerontology.
Yes.
See, gerontology is all about keeping old people comfortable in their last few years.
Right.
Okay, and just palliative care. Gerontologists, you know, at least old school gerontologists, say there's no such thing as anti-aging medicine. We can't do anything to reverse human aging or extend the human lifespan. Well, they're just plain wrong.
They're just plain wrong.
The fact is we can do a whole lot. But we're not gerontologists. We're anti-gerontologists. We don't want there to be any old people anymore. You see, we look at aging as a disease process, and until you do, you can't do anything about old age. But if you do recognize aging for what it is, a degenerative process, and if you're successful with anti-aging, we're going to put old people out of business.
And
so
you're also telling me, doctor, aren't you, that there's a chance, or even today, we have the technology available to not just perhaps arrest the process or slow it down, but to actually reverse the
process? To reverse certain forms of it today, but in the future, I believe we're going to be able to reverse perhaps the whole thing, or at least put it on hold. My view of anti-aging will be that within the next 30 years or so, we'll have the technology to stop aging at about age 55 or 60, and you'll be able to go on like that so that you won't be able to really tell much difference between a healthy and athletic 105-year-old versus a, couch potato 55-year-old.
You know, this is probably a stupid question, but there have been stories in fiction throughout, all of mankind's ability to write about such things, of magic elixirs, of things that people may have once discovered, of people who may have lived much longer than they let on, that sort of thing, that there might be a secret thing that people in Hollywood who can afford it consume. I don't know, a million rumors out there.
Well, I think the movie that talked about that was Death Becomes Her. And they were talking about a magic elixir, and that had an awful lot of parallels with research in human growth hormone.
Oh, did it really?
Yes, quite a bit. And there are a lot of people in Hollywood using human growth hormone and the other hormones as well. And anti-aging medicine is quite popular in Hollywood, let me tell you.
So then there is some truth to all this, sort of.
Well, there's a whole lot of truth to all this. Anti-aging is a really valid, hardcore medical science. The American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine has been around for 10 years now. And in 10 years, we've grown from a society of 12 physicians in 1993 when we incorporated to 12,500 doctors now in 70 countries around the world.
Wow, that's a lot.
And these guys are, not out there doctors. Most of our docs are board certified in a primary medical specialty. Most of them have affiliations with major medical centers, universities. They're researchers. They're pretty highly recognized and highly regarded clinicians, and they're doing this anti-aging medicine on themselves first, on their family second, and on their patients third.
Well, it's obvious to most of us Dick Clark knows somebody.
Certainly does. And so does Goldie Hawn and Cher.
Really?
And, look at Mick Jagger, running around on stage at age 60.
It's true. It's true. I mean, it really is true that some of these people don't seem to age.
They certainly defy our traditional views of aging, and they're accomplishing that. Not simply by, leading a good lifestyle, but by employing the technologies that we're talking about in anti-aging medicine. The kind of things that we have. Have you seen my new book, The New Anti-Aging Revolution, Art?
I have.
And what did you think?
I got it at the last minute yesterday, actually, but all I can do is lead through it. It looks incredible to me. I hope everybody goes out and grabs it. And you also wrote Stopping the Clock, right?
Yes, I did.
Longevity for the New Millennium. Mm-hmm. So you've written and written on this subject.
Well, I have over 32 books in print, but my newest one is The New Anti-Aging Revolution. It's over 600 pages,
right,
and it's all heavily documented, and it really details all these different types of therapies, both hormonal therapy, drug therapy, exercise, nutritional therapies. I mean, it's really a how-to manual on performing your own anti-aging medicine
program.
All right,
here's a basic question for you, doctor. A basic question, and that is, if you went for the whole Megillah, this is a money question. If you just wanted to go hog wild and you said, hey, I want everything done that science can do right now to either keep me young or make me younger, and I've got all the money I need, how much would it take?
Including plastic surgery and hormones?
Yes, sir. The whole Megillah.
First year, probably $25,000, $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Second year, $10,000 or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you took out the plastic surgery and the expensive hormones, you could do a program for as low as $2,000 a year.
No, but I wanted the whole works.
The whole works. Yeah, the first year, if you're going to get plastics, plastics alone are going to be $10,000 or $20,000. I mean, you may get by with $5,000. Let me break it down. The nutritional, non-hormonal, non-drug therapy program of anti-aging medicine, which covers about 80% of what we do, is about $2,000 to $3,000 a year. If you add on top of that hormones and drug therapy, you're probably looking at another $2,000 to $4,000 a year.
Okay.
If you're looking at plastic surgery, well, it depends on how pretty you are to begin with and what kind of shape you're in. If you need massive plastics, well, it can get expensive.
But you know that if you throw in plastic surgery, while I understand that it gives one a more youthful look, it's not anti-aging in the sense that I think of anti-aging. I think of the arresting of the process more than I do the folding of the skin back, you know, with staples or whatever.
You're right, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people are more concerned with how they look than necessarily how they feel. But you're absolutely right, Art. What we do with anti-aging is more on a metabolic and physiologic basis.
So, at least at the present time, that would be part of the whole Megillah.
Well, we have a lot of plastic surgeons involved in anti-aging. And the reason for it is that once people start looking better on the outside, then they suddenly become concerned about how they look on the inside. That's probably a bass-ackwards way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But that's just human nature, and that's okay with me. I don't care how people get to anti-aging as long as they get to it, because it's really a new paradigm of healthcare for this new millennium. This has the anti-aging medicine truly has the potential to solve the healthcare crisis that this country is in, the entire Western world is in, because we look at disease from, you know, I believe the correct perspective, which is the prevention of disease and the amelioration of disease before it presents itself clinically and it's incurable.
In my hot little paw, I have the new Anti-Aging Revolution, the book, and is it hyperbole or does it really say, it says stopping the clock right here.
Well, some things we can stop. I mean, we can stop bone loss. We can stop muscle loss to a large extent. We can slow down the process of neurological decline and cardiac dysfunction.
Huh.
You know, we can actually reverse skin aging.
Really? Our skin has a habit of, yes, it ages, it gets thinner. I remember when I was a kid and I cut myself, boom, she heals in a couple of days. Now you're 57 years old and you cut yourself and that baby's with you for a week.
That's right, or perhaps even longer.
Oh, yeah.
And that has to do, again, with the quality of your DNA, the quality of your blood circulation, the quality of your immune system, and all these are different systems of the body that need to be addressed individually from an age reversal or anti-aging point of view, but there are therapies for each of those for rebuilding the immune system, for improving the circulatory system.
Even though my sweater is half unraveled already, huh?
Oh, yeah. There are very exciting technologies coming along specifically for DNA repair that have great potential, Art, and that, you know, might be, you know, all you need is one breakthrough drug to turn the entire equation of human aging on its ear. You know, remember when penicillin came out?
I don't.
You're too young to remember that.
I'm a little older than I thought. My wife just handed me a paper and said, by the way, you're 58. Damn.
Okay, but I'm sure you remember, you know, I'm sure you remember Viagra. Okay, I'm sure you're young enough to remember Viagra.
Yeah, now you cannot go on the internet, doctor, without...
But Viagra is a breakthrough anti-aging drug.
Is it?
Of course it is, because before Viagra came along, what did we have? You got into your 50s or 60s, The little guy just wouldn't get up and, you know, and salute anymore. You know, he was tired all the time, and your wife was upset, or your girlfriend was even more upset. And, you know, guys just, you know, felt like there was something missing. Now you take a little pill, and it's not just Viagra. Now we have three or four different substances that all do the same thing equally as well.
I've heard there's a pill now for the entire weekend. I mean, you take this baby on Friday, and...
And it's party time all weekend long. Yes.
That really is true?
It's really true. Now you can, at least with one system of the body, literally... reverse time. You can perform as well as you did when you're 20.
Okay,
60 or 70 or even 80.
I understand. Can I ask a question on behalf of all guys out there?
Oh, absolutely.
About this? And it is, well, okay, is it some kind of incredible stimulant? I mean, does it get your body going in ways that are dangerous to your body? Or
No, it really only works. I'll tell you the story of Viagra. Viagra was originally developed as an anti-angina drug. It was to improve blood circulation to the heart. They found that there was this interesting side effect.
Yeah.
And the side effect was it increased blood circulation to another part of the body.
But in the process of the increase of circulation, isn't there like a blood pressure thing? Or
Not really. No, most people, Viagra has very few, you know, if you engage in very rigorous athletic activities when you are out of shape, you might put yourself at risk of increased risk of heart attack and stroke. You know, just like if you hadn't exercised in a long time, you went out and won, played basketball with Michael Jordan, you know, you might just fall down on the court and not get up again.
See,
act in a prudent manner and do things in a reasonable way, it's a very, very safe, it's a very, very safe substance and, has proven itself in millions and millions of people.
Well, it certainly is, it's changing the world in untellable ways. Okay. My guest is Dr. Ronald Klatz. We'll talk more about Viagra, actually, when we get back. It's very interesting.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
You know, this is one ride in time that we're all on, this ride of life. And it's kind of interesting that my wife has to carry a note into me saying, by the way, you're 58. When I was 56, one day I thought I was 57 on the way into Las Vegas where I used to commute every day. I counted up the years and I said, oh my God, I'm only 56. And I was all happy. Now tonight I'm talking to an anti-aging expert. And I tell him I'm 57. My wife brings in a note telling me I'm 58. Shows you how much I pay attention. So I would guess that the creator of and the manufacturers of Viagra will eventually become some of the richest people in the whole world, right?
Well, they're doing pretty good already. They had a billion. It's a billion-dollar baby, Viagra.
Yeah. So really, any drug that had a substantial jump like Viagra, which you assure me really does work, right?
Well, I've used it myself, Art. And all I can say is... Well, it was like being a teenager again. I mean, I don't want to endorse Viagra on your show, but,
Tell me what you believe. It really does work.
Yeah. It's really an example of an anti-aging drug, and a whole new category of drugs are coming out really in this arena. You have Botox that essentially eliminates wrinkles almost instantly. You've got Minoxidil. It's somewhat effective, for male pattern baldness. These are all anti-aging drugs, and there'll be many more of them. We have a whole array of anti-Alzheimer's drugs now and drugs for memory that we never had before. You know, Alzheimer's used to be a death sentence.
And they really work?
And they are really working, yeah, and not just for Alzheimer's disease. That's the good news. The good news is they're working for age-related memory loss. We're coming around, finally, the pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry is coming around to an understanding that medicine isn't just about broken bones or bleeding to death. It's about quality of life issues. It's about degenerative diseases yes, commonly known as aging.
Doctor, you feel that eventually, not today, but someday, a 5,000-year human lifespan could be possible?
Boy, that's a tough one. You know, bristlecone pines live maybe 5,000 years.
Yeah.
People, lifespan for people, theoretically possible. I mean, let's talk about, okay, today, lifespan, you know, when I started this thing in 19, I had the first anti-aging medicine practice, full-time medicine practice in America, I believe, in the year 19, in the early 80s,
okay.
84. All okay, right. I was one of the very first. As a matter of fact, I coined the term anti-aging medicine.
Okay.
So I was early on into this thing.
So you could be the father of anti-aging.
Well, some people have called me that and worse.
Okay.
But when I got started talking about life expectancies of 100 years of age, got tomatoes thrown at me by my colleagues in medicine.
Uh-huh.
Okay, today living to be 100 is no big deal. There's 80,000 Americans age 100 and above in the United States. There's 1.9 million Americans over the age of 65, and the fastest growing segment of our population is 85. So talking about 100 years of age doesn't raise any eyebrows anymore. So now I have to talk about people living to be 120 to 150.
Well, if you could live, I mean, it is one of the points that you sent me. You mentioned the 5,000-year mark. If you could live to be 5,000 years old, doctor, then you could potentially, it seems, be
immortal.
Yes. Immortal. I mean, 5,000, 5 million, once you've lived that far beyond what we can live now, what's the diff?
There is probably, once you get past a couple hundred years, there's no reason why you have to die. Frankly, there are very plausible methods by which you could achieve practical immortality today. I'll tell you about a couple of them if you're interested.
Oh, am I? Yes, sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, I discussed some of these on our website, which is www.worldhealth.com. .net. That's like the World Health Organization, worldhealth.net.
Okay.
But when I talk about practical immortality, there's a Dr. White who back in the 1960s did a series of very interesting experiments that gave him a lot of grief. He was from Case Western University at the time.
Yeah.
And he did these monkey head transplants.
I interviewed Dr. White.
Interesting fellow. Fantastic surgeon, by the way, a real pioneer.
Oh, I'll say he put heads from one to the other, and they lived. And
they
you're
lived.
Right, he caught a lot of hell for that, but that's the transplantation of heads.
That's right. Well, if you can grow a new body.
Yes.
And we can grow new bodies now with cloning technology.
Yes.
You could essentially, and with a high degree of probability,
yeah,
transplant your head from your old diseased, decrepit body onto a brand new, fresh body. And if the circulation is all intact, and if you have a brand new immune system, brand new heart, brand new lungs, everything else,
yes,
chances are good that the brain, which doesn't age very much at all, it doesn't age nearly as fast as the rest of the body, the brain's probably good for 150, 200 years without much in the way of other than a really good circulation and maybe a few stem cells. With stem cell technology, you might be able to go much longer than that.
Stem cells, abortion.
Yeah, we can talk about that too. But anyway, right now with just head transplant technology, and again, this is a little bit out there.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we can do it today, but if somebody really wanted to, I'll bet it could be done within 20 years or less. It's already been done in monkeys.
Well, you said grow another human body, which we can do with cloning
technology.
Okay, fine. But can you really grow a human body that's ready for another head, or do you have to take the head that was with the clone?
There's a lot of ethical issues involved.
I'll say.
Certainly you don't want to grow another human body and decapitate its head, and you know, for that's kind of cruel and unusual and unethical, I'm sure, and not really in the tradition of humanitarian medicine. So we wouldn't want to support that.
But
you could grow a body that was essentially headless, or you certainly could grow the organs.
You really think it would be possible to grow a body essentially headless? In other words, with the spine terminating there and,
Probably just a little bud on that's the brainstem.
Yeah.
And really nothing much above it. Yes, that can be done.
Holy moly.
Yeah, that can be done right now. And so we could essentially be growing new, you know, essentially new bodies for ourselves and just do a head transplant. Now, if you were to do a head transplant at the nipple line, okay?
At the what line? I'm sorry.
At the line of the nipples.
Yes.
Okay, if you were to take your upper body.
Yes.
At the nipple line.
Yes.
You wouldn't have to worry about being, you know, you would have certainly use of your arms, use of your voice, use of your face. All that nerves would be intact, even if we weren't able to affect a spinal cord transplant, though that technology is coming along, too. I mean,
sure
it won't
it
be
is.
Long before Christopher Reeves is up walking again.
Do you believe that will occur in his lifetime? I know he
I'd bet money on it. In his lifetime, absolutely. I mean, unless something horrible happens. So when I'm talking about his lifetime, I'm saying within the next 10 years,
right.
15 years.
And they'll get there?
We should have viable methods for repairing spinal cord injury.
Wow.
And perhaps complete spinal cord injury, but certainly partial transection of the spinal cord. There are some researchers in Israel that have already made some very significant advances in young people who have had very serious spinal cord transections where they have feeling in their legs and they're able to move their toes and control their bladder. And their bowels now, where they weren't able to before. In laboratory animals, in mice, you can take an almost complete transection of the spinal cord, and you can regrow the spinal cord such that the animal can start to walk again. Not perfectly, but certainly able to ambulate in a reasonable fashion. And that's today.
Then Christopher's expectations and prayers are not out of line. It may happen.
Oh, it will happen, Art. It's only a question of time.
Wow.
It's only a question of time. And that's why it's so critical that the American public stands up for their own future and that they get behind biomedical research that can really change the world in a very meaningful way. In America, we're spending $1.5 trillion a year on health care, and we sure as heck ain't getting our money's worth. Let me tell you, nobody is happy with the health care system as it works today.
You told me about Viagra. And so, let's try this one out. This is from Richard in Toronto. And he says, are there anti-aging methods out there that mainstream medicine does not acknowledge? If a breakthrough drug should come out, what chance is there that mainstream medicine might keep it suppressed?
It all depends on where the drug is coming from. If it's coming from Dr. Moskowitz and his small startup biotech company, the chances of it being suppressed are great. If it comes out of a mainstream...
Did you say are great?
Yes, there's a tremendous amount of technology that is... It's not like it's being evilly suppressed. It's just that the system doesn't give much credence and doesn't give much support to anything that doesn't come out of the mainstream orthodoxy.
Huh.
And so if you're not part of the orthodoxy, you are part of something else. You are, somehow unwashed. And it can take years, maybe decades, for your discovery, even though it could be the greatest discovery in the world. It could be a cure for cancer before it penetrates into the mainstream orthodoxy. And usually it penetrates that way by the orthodoxy absorbing it and taking it for their own.
Huh. Because
I'll give you a good example.
Because they're too stubborn. Because they're too stubborn.
Well, they're stubborn. They have unlimited power, and they have a closed, kind of a closed society. There is the powers that be that control healthcare, and they like it just fine that way. No one really questions them. And if you're out of the box trying to create something new. It's not just an uphill battle. It's like Sisyphus with the boulder trying to roll it up to the mountain.
Well, considering what healthcare costs every year, to disrupt an industry of that size, I mean, if you think the guy who had the carburetor that'll go 100 miles on water or whatever the silly thing was that they rumored, he was killed and buried in the desert as a lump. imagine what would happen to somebody who came out with something that would actually prevent all of these diseases. Oh, my.
Oh, my, that's right. Well, there's already, you know, if you want to have some fun, go on the net and go to World Health Net, or our website, the official website of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, www.worldhealth.net, and look up intellectual dishonesty and look up the story behind injectable human growth hormone for use as an anti-aging drug. It's been actively suppressed. It's been a whole millions of dollars of government funds have been used, I believe, illegally and unjustly to create this whole controversy around a wonderful drug that could save the lives or improve the lives of millions and millions of people, but it's been actively suppressed because this is a wonder drug of anti-aging medicine par excellence. It has fantastic science behind it, but the gerontologic establishment, the very few people at the top of the gerontologic establishment, didn't want there to be a drug of high note and high visibility that would prove that anti-aging medicine really worked. And so for a decade, they actively suppressed the research around this drug and created a controversy where none really existed and really made up bogus science to support their claims. And nothing's been done about it, and the media won't even report on it.
It figures. Let me back way up for a question. A lot of people wonder about this, and I'm one of them. Presumably, the good life, the good diet, exercise, all the right things will really get you there. I mean, that's what we're told all our lives by our moms onward. Well, a lot of us wonder about these people who eat nuts and fruit and vegans and, you know, a lot of them just up and drop dead. And
yes, they do.
There is that. And
the good life will, the clean life, let's say that, you know, it depends on whether you're a steak lover or not, whether it's a good life. But the, you know, the clean, a clean life, you know, and probably manifested best by the Seventh-day Adventists. They're vegetarian mostly, and
oh, yes.
They do lead a very clean life. They have a longer life expectancy to show for it as well. We'll get you to a healthy 75, but not a lot past that. I think they're living, 75, 80 on average, something
well,
like
what,
that.
What about that group versus the steak eaters and the people who enjoy? I mean, there is a price to be paid, and I'm not sure that being a vegan and really on some sort of strict regimen is really worth it. There is quality of life, too.
There's quality of life, and you have to decide on that.
Good steak, good woman, good whatever.
Exactly. If you lead a very clean life, you may live an extra, an extra 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6 years, as opposed to people who lead a relatively not so clean life. And,
right.
And it depends on whether that's worth it to you. But that's really not enough for us in anti-aging medicine. An extra 4 or 5 years doesn't cut it for us. We're really looking at altering, the mechanisms of aging and, metabolism so that people can be looking forward to a life expectancy, a healthy life expectancy, right on up to age 100. And again, if one of these miracle drugs comes along that can alter DNA breakdown or
yes.
or antioxidant activity within the cell, we might be looking at lifespans of 120, 130, maybe much longer. In animal studies, this is exactly what we've done already. And if you're a mouse or a fruit fly or a roundworm, we can easily increase your life expectancy by 40%, 50%, 100%, with genetic engineering as much as 300%. So
really?
Why can't we do that in humans? And I believe that we will able to.
That would be my question. If we can do it, is it only a lack of our willingness to do research on, or our legal ability to do research on human beings? In other words, why? Answer the question yourself. Why?
Well, the reason why we haven't done this is realize that anti-aging research, there is no anti-aging research out there. Anti-aging medicine is a clinical specialty because doctors are doing it on themselves and their families and friends and their patients and seeing remarkable results.
And you're saying the forces arrayed against this are so big and so powerful.
It has been the death. It has been the mark of death for a researcher's career until the last maybe the last 4 or 5 years, to even delve into the issues of anti-aging medicine. Anti-aging medicine has developed as a science by serendipity, pure serendipity. Everything that we do has come out of cardiac research,
yes,
out of research in genetic engineering and cell biology, and all these other specialties. The National Institute of Aging, which is the U.S. government agency that spends money on aging research,
yes,
their budget in 2002 was about $1 billion,
huh,
or so. How much of that do you think they spent on anti-aging clinical research?
How much?
Less than $1 million.
Wow.
Okay?
Why?
The rest of the money is going into issues of social issues of aging, into old people, some research into Alzheimer's disease, but most of it is administrative and social issues of aging, like why old people in nursing homes are depressed.
Huh.
Okay?
Why so little? I mean, why? It would seem such a natural thing to strive for, you know, the quality of life and then living a long time.
Because the gerontologic establishment, to this very day, takes the official position that aging is good, let's celebrate aging, hooray for aging, nothing can be done about it, it is a natural event, and nothing should be done about it, and so why bother to research anti-aging?
On a personal level, I felt a little the same way, that is to celebrate aging. You know, I get gray in my hair, the hearing change, all the things that come along with aging, I've certainly noticed, and I've sort of, in a way, celebrated them, I guess, and...
Well, hooray for arthritis, Art. I mean, you know, let's hear it for macular degeneration.
Yeah,
I
know.
Can't wait until I have diabetes, old, you know, diabetes of old age. Can you?
No,
how about a stroke?
Follow.
Let's hear it for stroke.
Let's hear it for stroke. I understand exactly what you're saying, but, you know, such an attitude is born of the inevitability, or apparent inevitability, excuse me when speaking to you, of aging. It seems.
And you're right, Art, and that's exactly the way it was until Salk and Sabin came along with polio, with the first polio virus. Until then, they were celebrating polio.
Let's hear it for polio.
For yeah. Leg braces.
Gotcha. All right. Hold on, Doctor. We'll be right back. We're at the bottom of the hour from the high desert in the middle of the night. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
This part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Sometimes my own bumper music kills me. I mean, this is so right on. Listen. Listen to the words very carefully.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Is indeed Dr. Ronald Klatz is here. He is the physician founder and president of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. In other words, not getting older. Stay right there. Let's ask a very impertinent question, sort of a nasty little question here. This is from Robert in Oxford, Alabama, so I don't have to claim credit for this, but I like the question. Does Dr. Klatz believe in the soul or an existence after the death of the body?
Okay, all right, that's a tough one.
Oh, yeah, it is. And it's an interesting one to ask somebody like yourself.
Well... Let me tell you what I really do believe in. I believe in a personal relationship with God, and I like to think that I'm helping to discover God's creation and helping to bring that into reality. And I believe that God wants to live a long and healthy life, as long as we have to accomplish what we have to here on the earth. And for some people, maybe that's 70 years, and for other people, maybe it's 140 years. Now, with regard to the soul, I suppose if I had absolute, complete belief that there was a soul and that there was a hereafter and another life that I was going to,
yes,
I would be perhaps less motivated than I am now.
That was the spirit of the question, you bet.
Yeah, even though I believe in God and I believe in a higher power and I believe that there is really a purpose to this universe and to this world,
right,
I am not certain that my... I'm very uncertain that my consciousness will continue onward. Maybe my soul or my energy or something of me will continue onward, but my consciousness, which I now hold very near and dear to me, which is what I think and feel,
yes, sir,
I don't know that that will continue onward. I really haven't seen any good evidence to support that. Uh-huh. Even the people who report near-death experiences, it's not, at least what I've seen, hasn't been overwhelming.
Are you unsure enough, doctor, that if that moment was there for you and the opportunity to have your head transplanted to a brand-new body, new immune system, workable, everything came along, you'd go for it?
I'm not sure about that.
I was picking on what you said earlier. I said, are you unsure enough of the existence of the soul that if the opportunity at near death for you came along to have your head transplanted to a young, healthy body?
Oh, sign me up, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, definitely I'd go for that right now. And it's not, even if I knew that there was a soul and there was another existence, I might want to hang around here long enough to accomplish what I'm supposed to do on this planet.
Well, that's a good, honest answer. I appreciate it. I can understand then why you would be working as hard as you are working.
Well, we live in fantastic times, Art. This is great stuff. I mean, if 9/11 hadn't happened, and the economy was booming along, there would be all this support for all these biotechnologies that... You know, the entire biomedical revolution is focused almost 100% on anti-aging. Everything that's going on in the laboratories right now in biomedical revolution, whether it be human genomics or protein, the Big Blue Project where they have these supercomputers to figure out how proteins are bending and,
yes,
and work within the body, whether it be brain implants or stem cells or cloning technology or new drugs, almost 100% of this will yield results for anti-aging purposes.
Can you explain to us, doctor, the advantage, the research advantages, and what we can expect from stem cell or hope for from stem cell research?
Great news with stem cell. Stem cell was always a great story. Stem cells are basically the progenitor cells that create our entire bodies. These are the cells, we all start out from, just a couple of cells that fuse during sexual,
right,
mating,
right,
and go on to create, billions and trillions of cells that become a human person.
The whole thing, yeah.
But we all have stem cells within us that are waiting there to replace cells as they die. And it's just that as we get older, we have less and less stem cells, and we lose the ability to replace those stem cells.
Right.
But even in adults, we've now found that there are stem cells for the brain and for the neurological system. We thought that that was all over by the time we turned 8. We were wrong. We have stem cells for our immune system, for our muscles, our bones, our hearts, our everything.
And so the promise of stem cell research is?
Is regeneration and rejuvenation of every system in our bodies.
Wow.
Stem cells are being used clinically right now to reverse sickle cell disease,
right.
Are being used experimentally in cystic fibrosis, experimentally in Alzheimer's disease, in stroke, and in heart attack. And it's working to one extent or another in all these disease conditions.
So then where might this lead?
It could lead to major breakthroughs that would lead to vast expanses in life expectancy. And the really good news is the government just last week announced, the NIH announced, it is going to free up $2 billion to allow stem cell research to go forward. You know, there was this moratorium on stem cell research because of the religious issues.
Abortion, yes. Uh-huh, of course.
Okay. You don't need to do abortions to get stem cells.
How do you get them?
The most plentiful source of stem cells are in placentas. And what do we do with placentas after the baby's born?
Various things.
We throw them away.
Toss them, yeah.
We toss them right down the chute.
Yeah.
Well, there are millions and millions of stem cells within the placenta.
Okay.
And so we don't have to do abortions to get stem cells. You can grow stem cells right from your fat. You know, when people have fat sucked out of them from liposuction, for plastic surgery?
Stem cells in there, huh?
There are plenty of stem cells in there. There's stem cells circulating in your blood. We can grow them in the laboratory. This whole issue of a religious issue around stem cells was completely bogus from the beginning.
So
I don't
know. Fat people might save the world.
It could very well save the world.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of kidding, really. But I mean, so there's stem cells available all over the place, and that's why they've suddenly granted the money. It's not the abortion issue anymore. Is that why the money suddenly became
available? Well, I don't understand what the thing was. I believe it was a political issue for whatever superpower politics were going on in healthcare. Maybe they're afraid that stem cells could cure too many diseases, and that's going to put too many, you know, companies
out of business.
Out of business. I never saw it being a religious issue from the beginning. Neither did any of the scientists in the field who knew enough. I believe what caused them to release the monies is that even though we had created a moratorium of stem cells here in the United States, England, Israel, India, China, Japan, the entire rest of the world were moving ahead, great guns on stem cells, and the guys in charge here figured they didn't want to be left in the dirt, and that's exactly where we were going to be.
Huh. So, full speed ahead on stem cells now, huh?
It seems so. $2 billion is going to buy a lot of research.
All right. Let us suppose that we did actually reach virtual immortality. The world would have to, by necessity, be a very different place, wouldn't it?
Anti-aging medicine changes everything.
Because we're 6 billion strong now on the planet. Already we're seeing effects, one could argue, of so many people being here.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, you can't have a continuing, you know, present rate of population, anything even close to it, if people are virtually immortal or even lived hundreds of years. It would change. It would have to change everything, right?
Well, it will change everything. And it's already starting to in the first world. You know, people are living, you know, realize that it's only been, you know, there's been no such thing as old age in the world, period, prior to the 1950s. Old age was unknown. People never lived long enough to worry about Social Security, never worried about nursing homes. These are relatively new events, only in the last 50 years, 100 years at the most. We are evolving. And in the Western world, our population rate is actually negative population growth.
Wow.
The only reason why we're expanding in the United States is because of immigration. But Italy has a reproductive rate per couple of 1.4 per couple. And, you know, and break even is 2.2. In Germany, it's 1.6. In Great Britain, it's like 1.5. In the United States, it's something like 1.7.
So immigration is, the way things are going with immigration, we might as well set up a DMV in Tijuana the way it's going.
Well, you're right, but that's another issue. But the point is that living longer doesn't necessarily lead to overpopulation, because when people live long, prodigious lifespans, they have less children. Because in the Western world, the more children you have, the lower your socioeconomic status, and the lower your the less available monies you have to spend on yourself and your enjoyment and your pleasure. In the first world, in the third world countries, the more children you have, because it's still an agrarian society, you need kids to work the farm or to go out and make money, or to, you know, they, a lot of children die during childbirth and during childhood. You need a lot of kids to, and a big family just to keep bread on and food on the table.
Nevertheless, doctor, at this point in this country, for example, where the growth is so low, as you point out, it's still voluntary. Now, if you got to virtual immortality, there'd have to be laws against procreation.
Well, maybe yes and maybe no. I'm not quite sure, but the trend has been in the first world to smaller and smaller families, and that is continuing, not discontinuing. As a matter of fact, in the third world now, as like the Asian countries start to rise in socioeconomic levels, their family groups are shrinking as well.
If there was a sudden magic bullet elixir, do you think that if the government had an opportunity to stop it cold, I mean, a virtual immortality drug, that they would indeed do so? Or would, how would it happen politically? I mean, would the politicians get a shot at it, and their families and the richer people, the corporate giants in America?
You can bet that if it comes out of a major corporation,
yes,
it's going to be suppressed, and it's going to be controlled, and it's going to
be from the top down.
It's going to be top down all the way. If it comes from a smaller entrepreneurial organization, if it comes from you know, members of the Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, it will be out there much, much sooner.
Which is more likely?
It's much more likely that it will be come out of a major corporation and it will be suppressed, or that it will be snarfed up by a major corporation, which will then, or the government will pounce on it with both feet, because the government doesn't like change. They've got everything wired just the way they want it right now.
How sure are we, doctor, that this has not already occurred?
We're not sure at all.
Really?
If it's out there, they've done a fantastic job of keeping the science wrapped up.
Oh, but then again, they would have, right?
You bet they would have.
So it's in the realm of possible things. I mean, there's science going on all over the place, all the time. And so something could have broken somewhere that, you know, that we just haven't heard about yet.
Yeah, that's quite right, Art. Art, could I do one thing with it? Could I have just a second time?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, my new book, the New Anti-Aging Revolution.
Yes.
600 pages, and it's $24.95 at Amazon.com, and about $5.95 postage and handling, so it's about $31.
Mm-hmm.
I really like you, and I love your listeners. They're the best show I've ever done all these years. I'd like to make it available at a special price if you let me.
I will always let someone do that.
Okay. $17.95. How's that sound?
Really?
And free shipping.
And
you
free shipping.
You save $13.
And how do you get this great buy?
Okay. You got to go to the Academy. It has to be through the Academy. So call Mildred at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine in Chicago, and the number is 773-528-1000.
Wait a minute. Let's get this. It's poor Mildred. All right. Mildred.
Huh?
one lady, Mildred. What's the number?
773-528-1000.
528-1000?
Yep, and ask for Mildred, and tell her, you know, from Art Bell, and she'll send it to you for $17.95.
Mildred, who actually is 404 years old.
She's up there, actually, but she's doing great.
I'm kidding, of course.
Or you can send an email, and we'll contact you to books at worldhealth.net, and send your email address, and someone will contact you and ship you out a book. And I'll tell you what, Art, if they mention your name,
yes,
I'll hand autograph the book to them.
Really?
Yes, I will.
This is a big book. Okay, Anti-Aging Revolution. What? Give me just a fingernail sketch of what I'll learn from this book.
Well, the Anti-Aging Revolution, you know, is the compilation of the latest information from the 12,000 members of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. So we talk about what causes aging and how to interrupt it and how to form, how to put together your own anti-aging medicine program. We talk about nutrients, exercise, diet. We also talk about drug therapies. We talk about how to find a doctor. We give the relevant websites that are out there, and this new book has a free interactive web program included. So you can use the book and you can have constant updates from the internet with this book. So okay. It's really a fantastic fantastic deal, and it's over 600 pages. And if anyone doesn't like it, I'll give them their money back.
Well,
you know,
that's hard
I
to
have
beat.
Had I've sold over 1.5 million books in my years. I have over 32 books in print. And I made this offer with all my books. You know how many books I've gotten returned?
Oh, no.
Less than 10.
That's pretty good. All right, it's Mildred, folks, at area code 773-528-1000. 773-528-1000. Now,
or
a couple of things
at
from...
worldhealth.net.
All right, and a couple of things from your book. One, how big a factor in the process of aging is stress? I mean, we all have stress, right, to some degree or another, but some people stress out like crazy. Other people just like nothing bothers
them. Good news on stress, by the way.
Really? What?
It's all in your head. And I know that sounds tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, a little
flippant.
But
it is because you are in complete control of how affected you will be by stress. And if you exercise prudent methods, meditation,
yes,
relaxation,
yes,
exercise, decent sleep schedule, the effects of stress will be much less than if you do not.
Well,
and so,
is it true, doctor, that people who are triple-A type personalities, I mean, just really going every second, and you know the people as well as I do, are they going to die earlier necessarily?
Yes, they will. They have a much higher incidence of both cancer, heart disease,
really,
stroke.
Really?
And there's some research to suggest even diabetes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All this from hyperactivity, stress.
Well, from the stress and its negative effect on the body, on the physiologic system of the body, especially the hormonal system of the body. You see, stress raises cortisol, which is a hormone that in high amounts will lead to premature aging. And so we, you know, even though you need cortisol, too much of it is not a good thing.
Okay. What about the opposite? I was always told that when we sleep, and this is from your book, I know you have a big segment on sleep, when we sleep, that we regenerate cells and, I don't know, our body does a sort of a natural repair cycle or something. People who get a lot of sleep versus people who get a little bit of sleep, I know a lot of people can survive on 3 and 4 hours of sleep, they say, a night. Others who will sleep for 10, 11 hours, what's the diff?
Sleep is still a major, major mystery in medicine. We still don't know why we have to sleep. But there are certain things that do occur during sleep that are very important. One is the release of human growth hormone from the anterior pituitary in the brain.
Okay.
And human growth hormone is a major regulatory hormone. Every cell of the body has a receptor site for it. It controls every cell of the body. It also controls thyroid hormone, testosterone. It controls the immune system. It controls many other systems within the body. If you don't sleep, you don't release human growth. If you don't sleep well, deeply,
uh-huh,
you don't release human growth hormone. You don't allow the body to go into the repair and recuperative phases that only occur in the deep stages of sleep. The four stages of sleep, the repair and recuperation and rejuvenation occurs in stage 3 and 4.
Huh.
If you're a light sleeper, or if you don't sleep well enough, or if you snore or have sleep apnea,
right,
or whatever, and you don't make it into stage 3 and 4 sleep, you will not release human growth hormone, you will not regenerate many of the organ systems of your body, and you will set yourself up for premature diseases, including diabetes.
Gotcha. All right. Hold it right there, doctor. Dr. Ronald Klatz is my guest, and we're talking about aging. Actually, we're talking more about anti-aging. You know, stopping the clock or even perhaps turning the clock back. How about it? Anybody out there want to live forever?
What will you do if you're lonely? No one waiting by your side. You've been wrong, I've rushed you home.
you to listen very closely to the telephone numbers that are coming up. Because in just a couple of moments, you're going to have an opportunity to call and ask Dr. Klatz anything you would like about anti-aging. So listen carefully.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Certainly is. And, you know, one question might be how much with regard to age and the ability to age ever so gracefully, how much is enough? Would there ever be enough where a point where you would say enough is enough? I want out of here. We'll ask about that in a moment. You ready? I've got one. Before we go to the telephones, I've got one, I think, really important question, and it is this. If we achieve lifespans, Dr. Klatz, of, oh, I don't know, 300 years, 1,000 years, 5,000 years, immortality, as it is right now, and maybe you can comment on this, maybe it's an artifact of aging itself. However, I have for a long time now, sort of held the theory, I may have told you about it before, that and this is almost universal, too. Almost everybody feels it, it seems like. As we age, as we get older, we begin to notice that the world is going to hell in a handbasket, that young people have proceeded to new heights of debauchery, and their music stinks, and a lot of things are happening that, frankly, by the time if you made it into your 90s, let's say, you're ready to go. You're going to throw up your hands and say, this sucks. I'm out of here. I'm ready to go. I really am ready to go. Now, if you lived 300 years, 1,000, 5,000 years, there would come a time, no doubt, even though physically you were able to stay alive, when you simply didn't want to be here any longer. Now, talk about stepping into a Pandora's box of ethical questions. There is a biggie.
But Art, isn't that wonderful? I mean, what do you want?
I don't know.
Forget about what you want. Let me tell you what I want.
Okay.
What I want is I want to stay here as healthy and functional and productive as I possibly can until I'm either too bored or too something, and then I say, okay, enough is enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to call my friends all together, going to get them all together for a big party.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, it's time for me to go, guys. It's been a great ride. I'm going to check out the other side, and I'm going to give Dr. Kevorkian a call or somebody.
Mm.
And that's the end. I mean, would you rather go that way? I think that's a beautiful way to go, as opposed to at the whim of a cancer
or
a heart attack or a stroke.
Well, I know, but bored to death is a rough way, too.
Well, I don't think you have to be bored to death. And the other thing is, Art, realize, I mean, you know, when you were growing up, you know, the height of technology, at least when I was growing up, the height of technology was a crystal radio set.
Yeah.
Okay?
But
now kids grow up and they have digital computers. They have radio telescopes. They have...
Yes. Okay, but doctor, you as a doctor, I don't have to tell you, your job is to save life, prolong life, value life above all else. So if we really got to that point, that mythical point that we were just talking about, wouldn't a doctor's view of life have to radically alter in order to allow for what you discussed, you know, the quick call to
forget Dr. Kevorkian clinics. How about we just do this? How about somebody gets to a point where he's had enough and he just discontinues his anti-aging therapy? And then he has, and then, you know, in a short period of time, you know, things are going to start falling apart, and he's going to go to his maker.
Let me tell you what would happen. People would go to court, and they would say, this person cannot be allowed to discontinue their anti-aging therapy. I mean, look at what's happening today, doctor.
I understand, Art. And I'm looking forward to solving those problems. I really am. You know, life is nothing but problems.
Sure.
And I think the people who lead the best lives are the ones who choose their problems wisely.
Mm.
And that's the kind of problem that I look forward to solving. I don't have an answer right now, but we can work on it. And if we have an extra 100 years to work on it, so much the better, don't you think?
But it must be that occasionally the people you work with have tangled with these seemingly somewhat intractable problems with regard to success.
You know, it rarely comes up.
Really?
It hasn't come up because, you know, people, you know, even though we look forward to the day when that will be an issue.
You don't spend a lot of time on it.
We don't, no, we're too busy trying to fight death.
Well.
And when we have too much life on our hands, then, you know, I guess we'll have other questions. Art, can I digress here for a second on another issue?
Of course.
You know, anti-aging medicine has happened by pure serendipity. It wasn't paid for by the government. It hasn't been supported by the government.
Right.
It's been actually suppressed.
Yes.
By certain factors. But it's happening anyway, quite to the chagrin of the people in charge. And there are now 30,000 doctors around the world who have been trained by the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And what we really need to go to the next level, to go to the to start having some major breakthroughs happen, is we need a center of excellence, a clinical research center focused on anti-aging, because everything that's happened so far has happened without any focus on anti-aging.
Right.
And unfortunately, the government hasn't seen fit to fund any of this, and there is not a single hospital in the United States that has an anti-aging department in it, though overseas hospitals and even medical schools are beginning to start up anti-aging medical programs.
That's incredible. So, I mean, you need money, right?
We need a telethon, Art.
Telethon?
I need an Art Bell, not me, but the profession needs an Art Bell radio telethon raise enough money to create a clinical center of excellence. You know, the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine is a 501c3. We're a nonprofit organization. I'm an unpaid volunteer for the Academy, so are all the other doctors who run the Academy.
Right.
We need to do a radio telethon to raise the money to create a hospital-based or university-based center of excellence for clinical anti-aging medical research to really move this profession into the mainstream. And you're the guy who can do it, Art. You can be the patron saint of anti-aging medicine. I want your listeners to send you letters and, you know, kind of encourage you in that direction, or at least, if not that, to send Bill Gates or Michael Dell or one of those guys to the Academy. Do you think you can help out?
Well, I don't know. What do you say to 10 to 15 years? You clip that off, we'll talk.
We could clip off 10 years right now.
Can you really?
Yes. Maybe. I don't know what kind of shape you're in, Art, because we never met in the flesh. We've had wonderful conversations. But on average, if I look at the average anti-aging medicine patient, which is a male about age 65, who's usually very successful financially and in other ways, but has kind of abused themselves physically.
Yes, I'd be in that category.
In the space of 6 months, it is quite common to see age regression on a laboratory basis, not just looking at them, but measurable on laboratory parameters by 10 years.
But, doctor, I'm going to ask you the magic question. Do I have to give up all my fun?
No. You may have to give up cigarettes. Cigarettes are pretty tough to get to work around. Not impossible, but tough.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to exercise a little bit, and you'll have to take a handful of pills every day.
A handful.
I take 60 pills a day.
Take 60 pills a day?
60. Now, that includes vitamins and everything else. So I take 20 with each meal.
Holy smokes.
Now, I'm taking a little bit more than most. Saying about 30.
What has it done for you so far?
Well, biologically, people usually tell me I look about 10 years younger than I am chronologically. And on laboratory analysis, my blood parameters are better than they were when I was in my late 20s, early 30s.
And I'm in my
late 40s right now.
You are?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You do look younger. Well, how many celebrity-type moneyed corporation type people come to you and say, let's do business, Doc?
Well, you know, they all want to do business for themselves and for their own health care.
Yeah.
But they're afraid to go public.
We are.
Kind of like the stigma associated with plastic surgery of 20 years ago.
Huh.
You know, everybody in Hollywood had plastic surgery. Or not everybody, but certainly most people. But nobody wanted to admit it. Now it's a cool thing to admit you've had plastic surgery. Well, anti-aging is kind of like right there.
Wow.
You know, everybody that I know in Hollywood is doing it. But very few people want to admit it. About the only guy who's really been public about it has been Nick Nolte.
Why would that be? Why do you think people are loath to admit that they would take 20 pills a meal, for example?
Because they're supposed to be beautiful and superior, you know, just as a birthright,
natural,
as a genetic kind of thing.
Natural, yeah.
And if it's unnatural or appears to be unnatural, somehow that diminishes them. I think it's kind of a ridiculous attitude, but, you know, it's a pervasive attitude still.
Gotcha.
But the Art Bell Radio Telethon for a clinical center of excellence in anti-aging medicine, for a nonprofit, federally registered 501c3 art, you could be immortal just from that. You could be the patron saint.
Well, I know, but that's the old kind of immortality where you simply are remembered well.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, see, I was thinking
we'll put your name on the side of the building.
All right. I once had it there. It was the Bell Telephone Company. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you?
I am in Oregon, speaking of Dr. Kevorkian.
Oh, yes.
I'm wondering if there's been any studies done on properties of MSM on its own. I know it's normally used to cause medications to propagate better through the body, but I'm wondering if there's been any studies done just specifically on MSM and anti-aging.
Well, MSM has been promoted widely for arthritis and for joint disease.
Right.
MSM may have other properties with inflammation. It turns out that as we grow older, we have more inflammation within our body. Inflammation has been associated with diseases as wide-ranging as heart attacks, stroke, cancers, arthritis. And so anything that helps to mitigate inflammation will probably work as an anti-aging substance.
Oh, no kidding.
You know about, you know, there's a great story behind aspirin. You know, all these people are taking an aspirin a day to protect themselves against heart disease. Well, they're also protecting themselves against cancers because it's an anti-inflammatory.
Okay. All right. Here we go. I've got a bad back. I've had a bad back, and I take a product which is widely advertised nationally now called Celebrex.
Yes.
And it has, among its other whatever all it does, it is an anti-inflammatory.
Yes, it is.
And I guess I've been aware of aspirin most of my life, too. But I've always kind of wondered, the Celebrex really helped my back, that and losing 50 pounds, really helped my back. And I've often wondered if the anti-inflammatory aspect of it would be perhaps beneficial in other ways, too.
Well, they're reporting now that people who have been on ibuprofen, which is another anti-inflammatory,
right,
appears to be protective against Alzheimer's disease.
Isn't that interesting?
And perhaps against some forms of adult-onset diabetes.
Really?
Again, by the anti-inflammatory process. Now, whether Celebrex will have the same beneficial effect, we don't know, but it stands to reason that if you can lower the levels of circulating inflammatory cytokines,
yes,
or, you know, these chemicals that our bodies produce that aren't so good for us,
right,
of inflammation, you may be able to slow various aspects of aging.
What would you say to the people who would say to you, doctor, this is the fact that we have a certain lifespan and we grow old and die is God's will, and you're screwing around with God's will?
I don't buy that for a second.
Well, I didn't figure you would.
Okay, and the reason why I don't is because if that were the case, then people who came up with vaccines for polio were screwing around with God's will, and people who come up with you know, any cure for any disease, okay, God doesn't want us to suffer. I just can't buy that. And if he did, he's, you know, then I'm a sinner, and I think I'm quite the opposite. I'm trying to to accomplish God's will by improving the quality and the quantity of life for every man, woman, and child alive today.
And so if immortality came to be, that would still be God's will. I mean, you'd still look at it that way.
You know, God has given us the intellectual horsepower and the technology to discover our universe, and both the exterior universe, or the stars and the planets, and the interior universe, the micro world of the cells and DNA and,
right,
and quarks and microatomic particles.
That's true.
Now, why would God give us this ability to understand the actual underpinnings of his mechanism if he didn't want us to discover it?
That's a good point. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Yes. Welcome back, and you are the greatest person on the air, and
well, thank you.
We love you.
Thank you.
Dr. Klatz, my question is, in your opinion, will DHEA or HGH have a positive or negative effect with a male in his, let's say, 50s or 60s with prostate cancer, which my dad passed away from a couple years ago?
Okay, prostate cancer is kind of a bag of worms. If you have prostate cancer, you shouldn't be taking anything that's going to stimulate the prostate to grow faster.
Yeah.
Any aspect of it. Now, it turns out, let's talk about human growth hormone. There was a big, again, misinformation program out there about IGF, which is one of the mediators that when you take human growth hormone as an injection, it has an effect in the body, but it also circulates to the liver and is converted to IGF, which is insulin growth factor,
one,
and that circulates and has another effect similar to growth hormone, but a little bit different. And a number of researchers looked at a bunch of people with prostate cancer and said, oh, look at this. Some of these people with prostate cancers have high IGF levels. And therefore, their theory was, well, IGF stimulates, is stimulated with prostate cancer. Therefore, don't take human growth hormone. Well, that research hasn't panned out. It hasn't been replicated. And it turns out that human growth hormone stimulates the immune system, which may protect you against prostate cancer. But having said all that, the basic conventional wisdom in medicine is don't give anything to somebody with a cancer that might possibly stimulate the growth of their cancer.
In other words,
so the good advice is don't take stimulants such as DHEA and human growth.
In other words, if you already have cells that are growing out of control, you don't want to toss gasoline on the process.
You may or you may not. It actually, DHEA happens, by the way, independently to be an anti-cancer substance. It's used experimentally in people with breast cancer.
That's sure interesting.
So, you see, nothing is quite black and white in this arena.
Apparently.
But if we're not sure, let's err on the side of conservatism, and let's be careful, because that's what anti-aging medicine is all about. Rule number one of anti-aging medicine is don't die. Don't do no harm.
Well, that's right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
You're a man after my own heart, doctor. I have been conducting a survey over 3 years asking people if they could live to 350 in as good health as Michael Jordan at his peak, where they want to do it. And I got back a stunning statistic.
What's that?
Only 8 to 12% of the people, but mostly consistently 10% of the people want to do it. And their motives, all except for about 18 people, was the same as mine.
And which
I asked myself the question, and I asked 272-year-olds and 368-year-olds, and they said, yes, the same motive as mine. 314-year-olds said to me, no way.
Wait a minute. What's the motive?
Is we want to find out what happens next. Absolutely.
Okay.
And people between the ages of 45 and 59, only a handful of those said yes. 45 to 59, almost totally said, no, one atheist said to me, if I had the courage, I'd commit suicide. I said, why? He said, it's much too tough.
You know something?
I find
you
that
know
representable.
My life gets
more interesting by the day.
Hold on, caller. Go ahead.
Do you know who wants to live to be 150?
Me.
Well, me too.
Well, aside from
you know who definitely wants to live to be 150?
Who?
The guy who's 149.
Yeah, well.
And so I really question these kind of polls. Because people don't have any clue what it's like until they're looking the Grim Reaper in the face. And if people were that brave, to be willing to, cut their mortal coil and move on, we wouldn't be having people grasping for life as they are at every stage of life. let's face it, you know, people want to live, and they want to live under almost any circumstances. And with anti-aging medicine, the circumstances aren't so bad.
Yes, but don't you think
about putting an end to aging?
But do you think they're answering that way because of the inevitability from their point of view of the death?
Yes, I think they are. And
a rationalization.
If they knew, as we did, that this scenario of old age will change, just as in the 1900s, the idea of half the people out there or being subjected or dying from the number one cause of death in the 1900s was diarrheal diseases.
Gotcha. Hold on, doctor. Dr. Ronald Klatz is my guest, and we're talking about anti-aging. Want to live forever out there? Huh? Maybe it's coming.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Moving through the nighttime, talking about arresting, turning back the hands of time, not aging. Dr. Ronald Klatz is my guest. His book is The New Anti-Aging Revolution, or Stopping the Clock, and he's got quite a deal on it, an autographed copy for you. It's a big book, by the way, and all you have to do is call Mildred. We'll call her Busy Mildred, and that number is area code 773-528-1000. That's 773-528-1000. We'll get right back to Dr. Klatz. Well, believe it or not, I'm getting a lot like Harry in Claymont, Delaware, for example, wherever that is. Harry says, "Hey, Art, please understand me when I say I want to die. I would not even perceive living forever. I can't. I want to be part of all the energy that makes us what we are, you know, not a pawn, an equation of who we will be." So, I mean, there's a lot of people like that, doctor, and not to, put them down in any way or anything else. I mean, a lot of people.
Maybe the argument shouldn't be about living forever. I really don't think we, it may not be desirable to live forever. You know, it may not be desirable to live more than 300 years.
Hey, 300 years, we can still have the same rough discussion. That's a long time.
That's a long time, but, you know, maybe, you know, I'm thinking that 70 years just ain't long enough right now. I mean, if it is over, over, I'm almost 50.
Right.
And, you know, heck, I've given up, you know, I didn't have much of a youth. I was studied hard. I had to put myself through school. It's been a rough life for me. I'm not asking for anyone to feel sorry for me, but, you know, I'd like to get some of those years back. So, you know, if I could have another 30 years of youth, before I hit my middle age or my senior years, I'd be very happy with that. You know, and that's really what anti-aging medicine is about. And let's forget about any longer years. Let's just talk about quality of life. You know, when I was growing up and, you know, I lived on the East Coast, You know, people were old in their 50s. When I was, you know, during the Vietnam War, remember the slogan, don't trust anyone over 30?
Yeah, that's right.
It's because people were old when they were 30. Well, heck, people ain't old over 30 now.
Well, you really are right.
You know, I think it's, you know, it loses the point if you look at anti-aging medicine in terms of immortality. Let's look at anti-aging medicine in terms of eliminating the diseases of aging. And let's live healthy and happy and youthful and productive right up to the very end. And if you want that very end to be age 80, God bless you. If you want that very end to be age 180, well, you know, you got my vote.
And your research, or as much as you're going to be able to do, the limited resources you have, I really would have thought there would have been much more in the way of resources thrown into this, considering the interest that, you know, older people would have.
You know, Art, I did too.
In living longer, especially as you get older, you get more money, so they put the money into living longer, wouldn't you think?
Art, I did too, and that's why I completely changed my career path and my medical focus and everything else, because I really believe, build it and they will come. Well, we've built it, and it's happening in spite of, not because of, the limited support that is out there for anti-aging medicine. And, you know, even the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, our society, even though we have 12,500 members, we've trained 30,000 doctors, we're still really a bootstrap operation. And our website, www.worldhealth.net, number one in space, but even that doesn't generate income. We're a non-profit organization. Mm-hmm. We really are non-profit.
Well, maybe there is the possibility, though, that more people like this, much as I know you cannot conceive of it, really do exist. I mean, they really don't mind, or they say they don't mind dying, and so maybe there really are a lot of people with that mindset, more than I understand that you could imagine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I just don't believe it. I don't think people really look forward to the golden years and want arthritis or want macular degeneration or want Alzheimer's disease or want all the things that are heir to old age.
Well, then why do we call them the golden years? Why don't we call them the...
It's advertised. It's Madison Avenue.
The graying out years. How about that? West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I had a question about... if people can live so long, what about overpopulation?
Well, you see, that's one I asked earlier, too. Yeah, let's tackle that for a second, doctor.
Okay.
I mean, he's right. If you achieve your goals, even, say, out to 300 years, oh, my God, at 300 years.
Well, the planet will, you know, the carrying capacity of the planet, we don't know what it is. You know, some of the better thinkers have said 10, 12, 15 billion people.
Yeah.
The current projections are, at current rates of growth of population, the planet is going to peak out and will start heading south after about 10 billion people, because as the third world develops longer lifespans,
right,
it becomes economically disadvantageous to have more and more children. And so the longer you live, the less children the families tend to have. So anti-aging tends to be a positive factor towards negative population growth rather than the other way around. So
yes,
even though you're living longer, people have less children, and so...
Maybe so. The situation, though, would still be extreme, and I can't help but shove the obvious in your face. And that would be that, I don't know, society would have to change.
Society will change. I mean, imagine that you had to plan your life like I did when I was 15. When I was 15, I had to decide where I was going to graduate school, where I was going to college, where I was going to medical school, what I was going to do, who I was going to marry.
Doctor, trust me, you're unusual. Most 15-year-olds, you ask, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know.
Well, okay. I'm unusual, but, you know, let's face it. You know, we lived in an age, all of us have lived in an age where life was more or less linear. You know, you were born, you go to school, you go to work,
yes,
you have a family.
Sure.
If you live long enough, you get to retire, then you develop two degenerative diseases. You fight those degenerative diseases and go broke in the process for the next 7 to 12 years, and then you die.
That's
the reality.
Roughly how it goes.
That's how it goes. But under an anti-aging scenario, where life expectancies are 100, 120, 150 years,
yes,
people can spend the first 30 years of that of their life being minstrels, traveling the planet, living, you know, just living for the sake of life before ever having to start a career, and then train for a career, work in it for 5 years, retire for a year, 2 years, retrain in another career, work in it for a few years, et cetera, et cetera. Also, there's another issue, and that's technology, and that's what's, I mean, there's a lot of things going to change.
Well, there would be positive things. For example, right now, I don't think people really particularly pay attention to ecological problems that will manifest themselves, for example, in 100 years, because
they don't think they're going to be around to worry about
being
it.
Being honest, yeah, to be really brutally honest, most people know damn well they're not going to be here in 100
That's
years,
right.
So who the hell cares?
It's when do people become philosophical? They become philosophical after the age of 35 or 40.
Oh, I've noticed the process well underway.
That's right, because there's a certain wisdom that comes with experience.
Yes.
And there's a certain, you know, like not just me, but us kind of attitude as you get older in life.
Right.
And so that's a pretty darn good thing.
It
and
is.
As the population ages, and we've seen this in older and older populations, the world becomes much more green. I mean, the Green Revolution didn't start in the United States. It started in Europe because they have an older population than we have.
Quite true. Quite true.
So they're not all bad things there, and these are sociological issues that must be addressed. By the way, Art, can I say thank you to two of my sponsors?
You certainly may.
You know, the Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine really couldn't exist without its sponsors, and two of the strongest supporters of our work and education research is Market America and MedHouse Pharmacy, and I just wanted to thank them for making it possible for me to be here to talk with you.
Okay, so they're your, they're sponsors for this.
They're actually sponsors. We have lots of them, but these guys have been really good lately, and if you want to know more about the Academy, it's all there, right there, 40,000 pages at www.worldhealth.net.
Trust
all
me,
free.
A lot of people are going to want to know more. Trust me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Art. I have a question just for your guest.
Yes.
Okay. Technology improves some generations, and a lot of people that are older are less likely to agree with some of the technological changes.
True.
And other changes, such as, like, currently cloning and tracking people through certain devices?
Yeah, sure. And stem cells and all the new kind of stuff that comes along.
Yeah.
They're less likely to be...
Yeah. Do you think there could be a problem with people like this that wouldn't want to do major changes because they like the things the way they are, and that could possibly help society?
Well, okay, let me see if I can structure this. He's right about people as they get older being far less, tolerant of change for some reason, doctor.
Well, that may be because of hardening of the neurons.
A hardening of the neurons.
No, I mean, I say that in jest, but one of the reasons why people don't like change as they grow older is they can't process information as quickly as they did when they were younger.
Quite correct, yeah.
And so that's a function not of wisdom or of experience, but it's a function, a physiologic function, where they are not, where they're losing mental capacity, where they're losing the ability to learn new things. Well, under an anti-aging scenario, people would not lose their capacity for new learning.
So since they,
new experience.
They can't assimilate it, they reject it as ridiculous nonsense that they won't have anything to do with.
Well, it becomes uncomfortable for them to address new issues. That's why people with Alzheimer's disease,
yes,
or people with mental problems, period, should never be moved out of their homes, because they're perfectly comfortable. They understand where everything's at. There's, you know, they're able to function very well in their home environment. But you put them in the hospital, and there's a thing called ICU psychosis,
mm-hmm,
where a lot of people who are perfectly good at home become completely disoriented and completely incapacitated as soon as you move them into a new environment, such as the hospital.
That follows. Okay, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Art, just real quick, I want to say I'm glad that you're back on the air, first of all.
Thank you.
We missed you. And second of all, my question originally was about the coral reef calcium supplement. And keeping the body in with the whole acid-based balance, keeping the body more alkaline than acidic, and if that helped with fighting off diseases and such. But in listening to you talk, I want to just have a quick comment, and then I'll break off here. about the whole growing older and everybody, you know, 300 years old and all that. Yeah. Imagine an Einstein that's 300 years old.
Huh.
You know, all that other stuff will work itself out as far as, like, where we're going to put these people and where we're going to, you know, where the food's going to come from and all that. But I think that it boils down to survival instinct.
Okay,
I find it hard to believe that a lot of people don't want to survive. That should be the main function of any animal is survival.
I mean, well, you know, the day before it happens, it probably is, as the doctors pointed out. But, you know, when people are safely in, say, middle age, 30 and 40, they can sort of make this detached judgment that, well, you know, hey, I'll go when I go, whatever. It's easy to do that, but then when you're facing it, it's a different situation.
All right, the caller makes a very good point, and that is about a 300-year-old Einstein.
Yeah.
Or how about a 100-year-old Hewlett-Packard? I mean, you know, Hewlett and Packard created an incredible amount of technology that has changed the world in very positive ways.
That's for sure.
You know, wouldn't it be wonderful if these great benefactors of society could be around a little bit longer?
Well, how much longer? You know, suppose we know less, I think, it's safe to say, about the human brain. We know less about that than any other part of our body. Isn't that true?
I believe that is correct.
Okay, so we might be able to grasp and get hold of and then successfully extend the lives of our body, the rest of our body, but what if we can't do anything for the brain?
Well, then there's no sense keeping the body going.
Right.
But the evidence is starting to show that with stem cell technology, we can repair the brain too.
Huh.
And if you really are stuck, if you really, you know, are stuck with a finite limit to cellular capacity to regenerate.
Yes.
Okay. And some people, you know, used to be, you know, the Hayflick constant used to, you know, stop a lot of researchers from exploring anti-aging because they thought that there was an absolute limit. We now know that there's not. That's been debunked. But let's say that there is some other limit that we come up against. Well, there's other ways of achieving, you know, practical immortality. There is technology afoot right now for being able to collect your thoughts, your feelings, your data, your knowledge,
yes,
of your life, and maybe create an artificial computer-based intelligence of your life experience, which would become its own personality and its own mirror image of you.
Basically,
ghost in the machine, so to speak.
You're saying you would be downloaded into a computer.
Or into a biological computer. That's a possibility too. We may, you know, not just cloning, but we may be able to form some kind of artificial life form.
Well, as quickly as we really are moving in the computer arena, I really wouldn't be surprised, but that one day we could download the essence of a human being, their consciousness, into a computer, and oh my, what a can of worms we're going to have then.
Well, it's important we talk about it now so we start the discussion.
Huh.
So, you see, I think it's important to create the future, not just let the future happen to you.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Hello.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine.
My name's Kathy. I'm in Seminole, Florida. And I tell you, I must have meant to make this call tonight because I went to bed and woke up and listened to the radio, and here you guys are.
Bingo.
as a matter of fact, you may have to have a telephone for me, Art, to pay for my cell bill. I'm waiting.
Anyway, listen, but we don't have a lot of time, so lay it out.
Yes, I'm sorry. I have a couple of questions, and then I think that I can let you go from there. When we were talking about, y'all were talking about the DHEA and the growth hormones and so forth.
Right.
There's a lot of dispute as to what growth hormone, what am I trying to say here? The type of growth hormones, whether it's pill form or whether it can only be given in the shots and this and that and the other.
Oh, yes.
And also as an application.
And so you wanted what, an answer to whether it could be given in pill form?
Well, yeah, that, and also does it apply to also the weight loss included with the anti-aging and so forth, that type of thing.
All right. Doctor, is it ever going to be a pill? Is it a pill now?
No, it's not. Human growth hormone, the research was done on injectable forms of human growth hormone, and injectable forms of human growth hormone are very powerful, and they do work very well.
You can't put human growth hormone in a pill yet because it's too large a molecule. It doesn't get absorbed through the stomach.
Huh.
However, there are products out there that are growth hormone stimulators, secretagogues.
Right.
And these are amino acids that work very well in young athletes, and millions of young athletes have taken these amino acids to boost their athletic performance, and it does so in part by stimulating the production of growth hormone or augmenting
right. The
natural production of growth hormone. And these things do work. Now, they only work up to a certain age, about 50, 55, depends on the individual, and then you start to lose the ability to release growth hormone, period, and the only thing that's going to work for you at that point is the injectable form. There are spray products on the market, but they are pretty much without science.
Huh.
They are not really growth hormone. They're more marketing than anything else. You have to be buyer beware, caveat emptor, when it comes to anti-aging, because it's such a powerful term. Marketeers glom onto anti-aging, and they create a real problem for us, the scientists and the physicians in anti-aging medicine. So if you're trying to get hard answers, we address many of these issues with regard to consumer protection at worldhealth.net.
Well, I mean, forever there's been Dr. Hook's magic elixir, right? The magic potion.
Yes, there has, and that's really been the bane of our science.
I'll bet it has.
It's hard for people to take it seriously when there's these scam artists out there claiming outrageous claims for their products.
Yes.
Anti-aging science is absolutely for real. Clinical medicine is absolutely for real. There are a lot of products out there that just don't live up to the hype. And so, again, go to worldhealth.net. We list a lot of consumer information on there.
Well, as a guest, though, you lived up to the hype. Hey, bless your heart for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Art. And thanks for coming back. Boy, I really missed you. You're a great host. And I've been doing radio for years, and you're the best interview I've ever had the pleasure of being part of.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night, Doctor.
I'll see you in 100 years, Art, I hope.
Yeah, that'll be all right. Good night.
Okay, good night, sir.
100 years. See you in 100 years. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to say that? See you in 100 years or so. Well, folks, tomorrow night, Dr. Roger Lear, hour number one, then Richard C. Hoagland and company. It's going to be a fascinating night tomorrow night. This is Coast to Coast AM, weekend style, through the nighttime. See you tomorrow night.